And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear. No fear here and declare your independence from me. Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Terry Bressy. We're going to, in his bio here, I didn't know he was in the Coast Guard. He used to be in the Coast Guard. Marine science technician. He's got, University of Arizona degree in physics and astronomy. Lunar and Planetary Lab, Electronics Tech, and Lunar and Planetary Lab Engineer, blah, blah. Let me tell you what he does. He makes sure we don't die from asteroids without knowing about it, at least. He's doing Skywatch, which is keeping track of heavenly bodies that might come in contact with us. That'd be bad. So I'm like, leave the guy alone as he travels from the University of Arizona up to Kitt Peak. He's a staff engineer at the University of Arizona's Planetary Lab. To get to Kitt Peak National Observatory, you must take an east-to-west running highway, which has an in-country immigration checkpoint. Bressy estimates he's been stopped over 300 times at immigration checkpoints along this road, which at no point crosses the border since he's been doing it since 2008. Now, Terry runs the website Checkpoint USA. Now, wait a minute. Since 2008, I remember the first incident, it was like December of 02 is when this thing started. Well, we'll get that all cleared up. Terry runs the website Checkpoint USA, checkpointusa.org, dedicated to confronting those who would place roadblocks in the path of free individuals and to exposing the police state one checkpoint at a time. Okay. Roadblockrevelations.org, has a bunch of stuff, too. Now, what we're going to talk about, there is a PowerPoint presentation that he gives at the gave at the Arizona Attorneys for Criminal Justice on suspicionless border checkpoint, not even border, internal checkpoint roadblock in southern Arizona earlier this year. And he's included in the show archive page. So Donna's got that taken care of. So that'd be cool that we got that. Also, Checkpoint USA's annual accountability through transparency video contest. Okay, there's a contest going on now. You got some good video. What might we win? We'll check with them. And then there's a, that's one thing. This summer we were out and they were talking about in September, there's some asteroid or something, we're all going to die. And I said, well, I know who to ask. So we'll talk to Terry. Terry, first thing, are we good, man? September, is there something going to hit us? Are we going to die? Are we good?
I think you can go about your lives without being overly concerned of any rocks hitting you on the head in September.
We're good. What brought that up? Why is somebody concerned about something? Who said something about something? What do they know that we don't know?
Oh, geez, I hadn't even heard about the concern myself until somebody mentioned it to me, so I had to look it up. And it's basically someone who just declared that they had a vision and that we're all going to die in a fireball sometime in September from a large rock from the solar system coming in and hitting us on the heads there.
Again?
What's that now?
Again?
Again, yes, exactly.
Okay, well, at least, if they want to hail bop, knock themselves out. All right, so what we're going to go ahead and do is let's get caught up with you and what's going on. First off, the Yeah, I didn't even know you were in the Coast Guard. When did that happen?
Oh, geez, when I was young and foolish. Back in 1986, I joined, and I was in until about 1991. And so I joined up in New England and went to boot camp in Cape May, New Jersey. And I ended up in Anchorage, Alaska, where I was at a Marine Safety Office. And we basically did responses to oil spills. We did cleanup operations and investigated oil spills and search and rescue and stuff like that. So it was after I get out of the Coast Guard in 91. I stayed up in Anchorage, Alaska for about another year or so, and then I decided that I wanted to learn about astronomy, and that's when I came down to Tucson, Arizona.
Why? Why astronomy? I mean, of course, up in Anchorage, ocean, looking up, you probably see a bunch of stars.
Well, you know, I've always been interested in science and engineering, and while I was in the Coast Guard, I was also stationed on a couple of patrol vessels over the years while I was in, and I was a quartermaster for about a year and a half or so. And during that time frame, I learned how to navigate by the stars, celestial navigation, and that was pretty cool. And that got me, you know, that piqued my curiosity and interest in astronomy issues in general, and I decided to follow up on that after I get out of the service.
Wow, very cool. And I remember when you were at University of Arizona, you were always being a libertarian rabble-rousing, I'm just not an automaton, and I don't totally agree, and I'm not signing here, and you took all my data, and you gave it to me, and I'm bitching about it, and you caused a ruckus. So they know that when you cause a ruckus, it's a ruckus to be a cause. So when they started trying to get you fired, the Border Patrol unions, this is... You know, that's interesting. Let's talk about that. As you're, we'll get into all your details of how you're challenging checkpoints and so on. But the main way that they, the government, that they would go after and try and stop you from what you were exposing is get you fired. What was the attempt there?
At the time, the president of the local Border Patrol Union, it's I think it's local 2544, was headed by an agent named Edward Bud Pusley, and he had a real chip on his shoulder with regards to anybody who would dare to question, you know, what the Border Patrol was doing, and not just roll over to, you know, any arbitrary demand from one of their guys in green. And even though he had absolutely, I've never had any direct interaction with him, and he was never at the, you know, at the checkpoint there that I had to go through on a regular basis, he decided that he was going to take it upon himself to use Border Patrol Union resources to try to get me fired. So he lettered several letters to the president of the university, claiming that I was putting Border Patrol agents at risk by, you know, taking video and pictures of them and posting them online, that I was violating state law that made it a crime to post personally identifiable information about agents, and that I was, you know, violating federal law for not, you know, answering their questions. And that prompted the university to open an investigation against me. And I obviously fought back against both that investigation and the ridiculous charges from the Border Patrol Union.
Well, there's been several times that they'd get them all pumped up again, and the next new guy, and a year later, and so on. And finally, they just kind of like, as I recall, it was like, yeah, if we do this, you'll sue us, right? Yep, okay, well, we won't do it then.
Yeah, Tuffley didn't just limit his attempts to get me fired by putting pressure on the university. He also contacted Russell Pierce in the state legislature at the time to try to get some pressure on the university through the state legislature. And he also contacted, like, local law enforcement, you know, would do these claims regarding my activity.
Well, real quick, before we hit the break, when you won your lawsuit at the Ninth Circuit and got y'all money and so on, $250,000, I mean, you know, we'll get into that later. Did they still keep trying to do this, or did they finally back off?
The union had backed off at that stage, but just because I was so successful in the court.
Oh, we'll see where we're at now when we come back. Lots to talk about.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Tensions in Washington, D.C. reached a new high yesterday as several dozen members of Congress took a class of visiting school children hostage, barricaded themselves inside the Capitol Rotunda, and demanded $12 trillion in cash. The children were rounded up at gunpoint, whereupon the House Speaker informed negotiators that one child would die every hour unless their demands were met. Here now, a brief video one of the students was able to send out from inside the Capitol.
Nobody move!
Historians across the country politely reminded Americans this week to quickly check and see what has happened in the past before making any big decisions.
Just take any book with history in it and then quickly skim through it to see what decisions in the past turned out to be bad. And then once you've pinpointed them, simply don't make those same decisions again. Because if a bad thing happened again, you see, that would be very bad indeed, wouldn't it?
This is the Onion News Network.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, but there's still maybe checkpoints. I'm sorry, you passed by our planet. Move over. And we need to inspect something. Okay, now this after a while, let's go ahead and just sum up real quick what happened, how this started. I mean, it was December of 02, I mean, it was right before I started doing radio in February of 03, that Terry Bressy, a good libertarian that we knew down in University of Arizona, one of the good guys, and he's running up against a problem, kind of, whoa, what up? And I remember from the very beginning, all the discovery and the lawsuits and the reverse lawsuits and the back and forth and the charges and going, and then finally, it goes all the way to the Ninth Circuit, where he was awarded like $250,000. You know, you go, they go, yep, no, that wouldn't have been prudent. But what happened is that you trained the Border Patrol. And it's like, okay, well, you got to have this document. You got to do this, got to do this, got to do that. And that's a Terry Bressy manual of how we're, you know, going to rule you. And I'm wondering how they treat you now. I mean, you know, there's always the new guy that didn't get the memo. Just, it's Terry, just let him go. And they'll just, you know, get his chest out. I'm from another. I'll show you how to do it. You know, and they just don't know the buzzsaw that they're coming up against. So go ahead and just, in general, just, you know, do the 3-minute version of what happened and progression to, and then we'll skip to the end of some stuff that we need to talk about now. Go, Terry.
Sure. You know, the Border Patrol started getting really active along State Route 86 in southern Arizona in about 2002, 2003. And I was coming home from work one late afternoon on December 20th of 2002. I was still within the boundaries of the Tohono O'odham Nation there. And the local police had set up a checkpoint just at the boundary between the tribal nation and Pima County. And when I was stopped there, I asked the officer who stopped me, I said, well, what's going on here? He said, well, this is a sobriety checkpoint. And I said, if this is a sobriety checkpoint, then why are there Border Patrol agents running dogs up and down, you know, the side of all vehicles along the side of the road? And why is there customs agents standing in the middle of the road with your guys and interrogating people at this checkpoint. These federal agents don't have any, you know, any jurisdiction over local sobriety issues, you know. And, of course, that kind of pissed off the officer who stopped me there, and he kind of motioned, and several other officers and some of the agents started to gather around my vehicle.
Yeah, we got one of them. We got one of them.
Exactly. So within short order, I was, you know, found myself being dragged out of my vehicle and handcuffed and then dragged off to the side of the road where, you know, they foolishly allowed me to observe their operations for the next 3+ hours. And it was very clear that they weren't conducting a limited scope sobriety checkpoint. They were doing a full-fledged, you know, law enforcement dragnet operation with federal agents working hand-in-hand with local police and doing, you know, trunk searches and interrogations and, you know, drug dogs and the whole works there. And of course,
in the name of 9/11, 9/11 happened. We must stop everybody across the planet and Osama bin forgotten wins. I mean, you know, this was we saw it coming. Yeah, as libertarians, we've been screaming that this was coming. You were already sensitive. You knew what was going on. They, you know, finally had their excuse to be, you know, Nazi police state. And one thing that really got me in the first investigation that we had was these automatic trailer pulled, what do you call these things? Guard towers, you know, that deployable guard towers. You have two Suburbans pulling each one and they come up and they veer off to the side of the road and both sides of the road, pop those things up, boom, instant roadblock. And I'm going, This is going to go badly. They are going to supply the police state and somebody is going to make a bunch of money. And you started seeing these things pop up everywhere. And I'm going, yep, here we go. And at the very beginning of this, there was Terry Bressy. So as they are doing this, what you observed is that what they were doing was illegal. And you kind of trained them, schooled them on what was illegal, but that didn't stop them from using overwhelming force, so we're going to squash Terry.
Right. They don't like to be told, you know, that there's actually limits on their authority and what they can legally do there. So they go out of their way to try to bash down anyone who presumes to tell them how to conduct their operations there. But if you can, if you have the staying power there, and you can withstand the onslaught that they bring on, then. You can actually, I think, make a difference over time.
You know, one thing I am interested in is your job at University of Arizona. What is your job?
I am the chief engineer for an astronomical research group. We operate two telescopes up at the Kitt Peak National Observatory, and we also have a lab down on the university campus. And we conduct surveying and recovery operations about 24 nights of every month using those two telescopes. And what we're looking for is asteroids and comets in the solar system, with a specific emphasis on those asteroids and comets that come within the inner solar system. It could potentially be a hazard to the planet at some point in the future.
You know, since I've known you, I paid a little bit more attention. I had no idea there were so many asteroids and, you know, other foreign bodies or whatever that share our orbit. I mean, they are in... you know, it's like amazing we haven't been hit more, you know, so I'm there's a lot more when they go out and we're going to go mine an asteroid. They don't have to go to the asteroid belt. They got a whole bunch in Earth orbit or around, you know, the same orbit around the sun. So there's a lot more potential out there than I think people realize, right?
Yeah, well, you know, in all, we've categorized about 700,000 asteroids in the solar system, and about 12,000 of those are considered what they call near-Earth asteroids, and those are asteroids that come within the inner solar system between, you know, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. And of those 12,000 asteroids that are considered near-Earth asteroids, about 1,500 of those are considered potentially hazardous. So we try to keep a close eye on those and refine the orbits so that we know, you know, with ever-increasing precision exactly where these objects are.
Let Terry alone. Let him do his job. You know, I need a red phone to you and Elon Musk to, you know, launch. Launch, 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 launch. Go get it. Okay, so this is, while you're sitting on the side of the road, you know, we die. So I'm going... as you were sitting there the first time and you're observing this, what was it that you knew was illegal?
Well, in 2000, the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled on a case known as City of Indianapolis versus Edmonds. And that was a case where the City of Indianapolis was conducting drug checkpoints. So they're using drug dogs and stopping vehicles for the purpose of interrogating, you know, vehicle occupants with regards to the use of drugs or drugs in the vehicle and that type of thing. And their operations were challenged by several concerned individuals, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled that, no, you cannot stop vehicles absent individualized suspicion of wrongdoing for general law enforcement purposes or to look for drugs. You can only stop vehicles absent suspicion based upon Fourth Amendment jurisprudence for public safety issues. So, for instance, the Supreme Court has said it's okay if we stop vehicles and ask a few brief questions looking for drunk drivers because a drunk driver presents an immediate danger to other people traveling along the roadway. But you can't do that just looking for ordinary criminal wrongdoing.
So we just put a swastika on the sleeve and say it's a drunk driver checkpoint. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Which is what they were trying to do. So we'll talk more about it.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world?
Yes. Okay, when we come back, let's go ahead and just pick it up there. You know, it's a sobriety thing. Okay, I do want to get this in. I mean, just finish. We're going pretty quick here, you know, but we're going to run at it. We only got two more segments, and I want to get, you know, the updates of what's going on with you and then, of course, the video contest. And, you know, and the motivation to call you is like, we're not going to die, right? Oh, okay. So that's good. You know, the is there a new discovery? Do you find when you're doing the astronomy, you're going, damn, I didn't know that one was there. Ooh, that was a surprise. I mean, are you getting surprised a lot? And, ooh, that's a close call. Or do you guys pretty much have the technology you can see what's coming?
Well, you know, there's a couple of different mandates that we that we're doing this research based upon. The first mandate is that we find all asteroids that are 1 kilometer in size or larger, and and could have a collision, you know, orbit with us. And modeling indicates that we found probably about 90% of those objects. So there's probably another 10% of those 1 kilometer or larger, basically planet busters out there. That we haven't yet found.
How the hell do you know there's, you got 90%?
I mean, well, you know, there's a lot of modeling and statistics you can use to determine that. So, you know, based upon the distribution of objects that we know are out there and you know, the age of the universe and all that kind of stuff, they can come up with fairly accurate models, predictions with regards to how many objects of a certain size exist in various orbits out there. And for the large part, our observations are actually showing these models to be fairly accurate. You know, all the time, new technology is being brought to bear, larger telescopes and whatnot. And as these larger telescopes are being utilized for these types of searches, we're finding that we're closing the gap with regards to the predictions of the models.
Okay, what about these new CubeSats and smaller sats? And I got a 15 gazillion of we're going to do and replace Hubble stats. I mean, is there some new technology that's coming out and they're doing? Because there's a motivation in the private sector to map all these asteroids, get a spectrometer kind of reading on there's platinum. Let's go get that one. So, you know, I'm
right. Yeah, like I think the company at the forefront right now is Planetary Resources, and uh-huh. I went to school with the president of that company. Lewicki is his last name. There, he went to the University of Arizona, was an engineering student.
Yay, call him! I want him on the show.
Well, maybe the next time I get, you know, he comes by. He came by a couple years ago and did a presentation at the Lunar and Planetary Lab where I work.
Done. I want to go. I want to have him on the show. I want to Planetary Resources. I've been following that since the beginning. That was the James Cameron thing, you know, all those guys. And I'm sorry.
And Chris Lewicki is the current president of the company, and he's a U of A graduate who's heading it. He worked for NASA for several years after he graduated, did a couple of missions, so the Mars missions, and is now doing planetary resources.
Yeah, I know. Of all the resources and the time and spent and the money and what you find and everything, and it's decades of government, and in 18 months they mapped everything, you know, by themselves because they wanted to make money.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's fairly expensive to do operations in space, even though prices are sturdily coming down.
CubeSats!
CubeSats, exactly, and that is the big push now. And there's a lot to it there, but there's still a lot more that needs to be done. And
all right, well, we'll talk about this on air a little bit, you know, but we need to finish up on the other stuff. Here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay. Now, in the break, you guys go listen to the archive and talking about this main thing. There is a private effort to make sure that as many asteroids that, you know, it might produce some goodies, because asteroids, the Earth made up of a bunch of the stuff of the solar system. So where do you think big giant pockets of gold and platinum and everything come from? It was, you know, from stars exploding back in the day of dust that accumulated and kind of pieces, and there it is. Well, you can go and you go to an asteroid and you go, hey man, that thing could be 20% platinum. You know, that one right there, a whole bunch of nickel. This one is, I mean, so they're taking these CubeSats and different satellites and going up and analyzing them. And a lot of them, they don't have to go to the asteroid belt. They go, wait, we'll wait a month and the Earth will be right next to it. We'll go get it, put it in moon orbit or something like that. So it's just like in the original Aliens, you know, with Sigourney Weaver. That's what that whole thing was about. They were out capturing asteroids, bringing them back, and they had to, you know, we'll just go and check out this planet, and then the alien happened, you know, and they lost their asteroid. But a lot of people don't remember that. But the thing is that he's, or me, or whatever. So what they're doing in the private sector now, with all the resources and the time it takes for Terry to be able to map all this stuff, they're putting a bunch of little CubeSats up there, planetary resources, which is James Cameron, the director of Avatar and Titanic and so on, is part of this. They're mapping all of these asteroids to, you know, find out which one they want to go get. You know, you may have gold plummet to nothing. They go find big giant asteroids all gold, you know, don't laugh. So I'm going, okay. So as they're doing this, you know, the guy that's the head of Planetary Resource, CEO or whatever, is a classmate and guy and friend of Terry. Terry's going to get them all for us. We're going to go get some. Now, the thing is that, you know, all the stuff that you do, are they sharing or going to share with your community of we don't want to die, the information that they're finding out from these satellites? And tell us about, you know, the innovations and what's coming in technology to make your job easier.
Oh, geez. You know, it's so far, you know, it's a collaborative type of effort. You know, for instance, the Lunar and Planetary Lab where I work is currently engaged in the OSIRIS-REx mission. I don't know if you've heard about that, but that's an initiative to launch a spacecraft in 2016, next year, I believe September or thereabouts, to land on a near-Earth asteroid, to drill down into the asteroid, take some samples, and return those samples to the Earth. So that's a larger type of mission that's, you know, proof of concept type of thing that's being done at the University of Arizona. Planetary Resources, on the other hand, is a private entity at this stage, but they're very interested in helping with funding and whatnot for, you know, groups like that I work for and other asteroid research groups to both help get our databases online. I mean, currently we have about 30 terabytes worth of observation data from the last 15 years that we're just now getting into a database form and getting online.
Well, what form is it in now?
Well, it's in now. It's on like DVD disk. It's on hard drive disk, but it's not all on spinning disk. It's only been in recent years where the technology has improved enough, and the fund and the costs have come down enough where it becomes feasible for us to be able to get, you know, 20 or 30 terabytes worth of data online and serve that to the public at large.
Okay, now this is one thing right here that has been of interest to me. You can help me with.
Sure.
I pay in taxes, well, whatever they get out of me, you know, it's our data. When I have a weather satellite, magnetometer, spectrometer, it's looking at the magnetic field of the Earth and the Aurora Bora. I'm looking at the sun of tracking of the Hubble. And I'm going, all of that telemetry, all that information, everything, that's mine. Okay? So they do it, and it goes to somewhere. I go, whoa, where's my feed? And that's one of the things I'm thinking that might be changing is as we have the technology and the bandwidth and the ability to communicate this stuff, I don't need Terry to be the only person. I just go up to the website, punch it in. It goes into my graphic interface if I'm looking at and mousing over. And, ooh, I had a 13-year-old in his grandma's basement in Oklahoma sitting there watching, and he found the asteroid. You see my point?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different things that like groups that I work for do. Every night, we do real-time processing and review of all the data that comes in. And we have software that automatically detects moving objects, and we also do manual reviews. So our software will flag objects that are moving in the background, and then we will manually review all of those flags to make sure that it is indeed a real object. After we review it, we verify that it's real. We take measurements on that moving object. We process those measurements, and then we send those measurements in almost real time to the Minor Planet Center on the East Coast. And the NPC is the clearinghouse for all of these observations. And they add those measurements to their database. They try to link up those measurements to known objects, and they make all of that information available to not only the scientific community, but the public at large. Yeah. So if you have your own telescope, you can go out in your backyard, you can download an ephemeris that you can have the NPC generate for you for any particular object, and you can try to do your own observations to either recover that object, or you can go into a survey mode and survey the night sky looking for objects that other people haven't discovered.
Okay, you keep saying recover. What do you mean recover?
Well, there's two elements to the type of research that we do. A, first you have to, discover the object in order to even know that it's out there. But just because you discover it, that doesn't give you a whole lot of information about it. Usually a discovery involves an arc length for that object of maybe anywhere between 10 minutes to a couple of hours. But that's not a long enough arc of observations in order to determine a good orbit for that object. So if you really want to know where that object is going to be at some point in the future, you have to continue to observe it over a long period of time so that you can fine-tune your observations, and that those observations can then be folded back into the orbital calculations to tell you exactly where that object is going to be. So once a new object is discovered, that object then goes into our database, and we try to recover that object as often as we can over preceding nights.
Okay, now, how many new objects are you guys discovering a year? I mean, is it kind of like the exoplanets? It's like, oh, another one, and another one, and another one. I mean, how often are you finding something new?
Well, all the groups that are doing this type of research together, we are finding on the order of 700 to 800 new near-Earth asteroids every year.
Damn. And these are all over a kilometer?
No, these are any sized objects that we're able to detect.
How small can you go down to detect something?
Well, it depends on how close it is. So we found, objects that are on the order of 10 meters in size before, but they have to be awfully close in order for them to be bright enough for our telescopes.
Well, you get small enough and close enough, it's like Slim Pickens riding the bomb in, man. Yeehaw! it's going, all right. All right, well, let's go ahead and, we got like a minute for this segment. The thing, after your win in the Ninth Circuit of they did it bad, what'd they do? They stop, or they just change it up a little bit, and they go, yeah, we'll stop them this way for this reason, and screw Terry, here's your quarter million, shut up.
Well, what a lot of people, I've tried to make this distinction in the past there, but the checkpoint that I, was initially stopped at in 2002 was officially a tribal police checkpoint. But, of course, the feds were piggybacking off of that. But all of the legal action that went forward was with regards to what the tribal police could do along that state highway there. and the feds were able to keep themselves out of it. In fact, we tried to include the Border Patrol as a defendant in the lawsuit, but they were able to convince the federal judge to throw them out as defendants because they claimed that we hadn't shown enough of a nexus of federal involvement.
Whoa, enough of a nexus of federal involvement? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Well, weren't they Border Patrol and DEA and Customs and every alphabet soup when you first stopped or sitting there?
But I didn't have video. So now you know why I carry a video camera with me.
The video. We're going to talk about video when we come back. He's all about the video. Got video. How many cameras? Five.
Oh, I've got five.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Okay, we got one segment left here in a minute and a half, and then there may be a little post, but I mean, we need to get on it. So the what are we going to talk about? The video contest. We're going to talk about, you know, make sure you're videotaping, and then once you started doing, did you get to add into your case a lot of the other instances, or those all separate?
Those were all kind of separate there. So, it boiled down to, the lawsuit boiled down to just what the tribal police could or could not do along that stretch of road. So the Border Patrol get out of it. But, of course, the Border Patrol is well aware of the fact that that I was involved with that lawsuit and that I know how to operate within the legal system. So, they were more kid gloves with me than other people.
Until there's that one guy that didn't get the memo.
Yeah. But there's plenty of other instances from around the country where they are continuing to assault individuals who exercise their right not to answer their questions. And I've got several cases I can talk about there. Yeah. I'm really not ready to talk a whole lot about the video contest because I haven't really prepped it all that much yet.
Okay. And, we'll just let everybody know it's a coming and get your stuff ready and you know what, and this is what I do, and you got to beat five cameras. So I get it. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit, and we'll do what we just said. Here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your
lies. Your lies, your lies, your lies, your lies. I'm covered in secrets, exposing the lies. I hate the lies, lies, lies. You know, Terry Bresci is a lie uncoverer, exposer, shower. You know, this is, you know, they go, no. He goes, yeah, I got five video cameras. Uh-huh. You know, has that happened before, Terry? They'll say, that never, I never, and then you go, yeah, well, I got video, and they know you got the video, and they lie anyway, because it's just automatic default position, they just lie. How often does that happen?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, the last incident I had back in April of 2014, where the Border Patrol was working, you know, they've got this deal where they pay the Pima County Sheriff's Department about $1 million a year under Operation Stone Garden, and what this does is they pay deputies time and a half to sit there for 8-hour shifts at the Border Patrol checkpoint, right, to aid and abet the Border Patrol with harassing the traveling public. You know, and so when I pull up, you know, they're like, yeah, all right, we've got the county sheriff here today, you know, we'll let him do our dirty work for us. And you know, sure enough, they hold me in the lane of traffic, refuse to let me go. Then they go off over to the sheriff's deputy and say, oh, yeah, this guy's blocking the lane of traffic, right? And, you know, so the deputy comes up and he goes, well, you know, what's going on here? Are you some sort of constitutionalist? and that sort of stuff. And the next thing I know, I'm being cited for either, you know, blocking traffic or honking my horn or something like that. And then the deputy has the audacity to go into court, you know, when I challenge the tickets and claim that, oh, the checkpoint had nothing to do with, you know, with the citation. And I'm like, well, here, Judge, here's five videos from five different cameras I had running at the time, you know. And you know, so far, you know, I've been cited like three times by local law enforcement on behalf of the Border Patrol over the past several years. And I defended myself pro se in court, and I've won every single time. You know, so, you know, having video evidence of what transpires whenever you're forced to interact with a government agent is essential these days. You have to have video evidence.
When they are wearing their own video and they do give you a beat down, it's just weird, man. They're just weird. You know, there's something else going on. The when you get stopped, usually when you go through the checkpoints, they go, it's Terry. Wave them on through until there was, I remember most recent I recall a couple years ago, there was a guy that was well known for being a butthead in San Diego or something. He comes out there and he's going to explain it to you. And I guess he didn't get the memo or he just thought he was special or something. And he get some new guy that, you know, they want to do a beat down on Terry and it just doesn't go well. And I'm wondering, does that happen often or the supervisor like, damn, I told you not to, how does that work out?
Yeah, this incident that I was talking about in April of last year actually involved this agent, so who I believe was stationed in San Diego. His name is Jay Tackett, Agent Jay Tackett, and he was the agent who currently has a civil lawsuit against him because in San Diego he jumped on the car of a woman who was trying to back out of a parking lot. And shot her, you know, nine times dead. You know, a mother of like two or something in San Diego. Uh-huh. He claimed that she was trying to run him over, and all the eyewitnesses claimed that no, he chased down the vehicle, jumped on the hood, and shot nine times into it, killing her. And a recent use of force report out of Congress showed that this type of thing happens on a fairly regular basis with Border Patrol.
Well, what was the punishment to him? He got a medal or something?
Oh, the Border Patrol hasn't done anything to him. In fact, if this is the same guy, and I'm fairly certain it is, what they do is that they just move. You know, it's kind of like the Catholic Church, right? You know, if they get into trouble in one jurisdiction, they just move them to someplace else. You know, so.
Did he specifically? You know, I'm going to get me some Terry. I'm going to show him how it's done, or he just does it to everybody and hit the wrong guy. What happened?
Well, you know, I don't know if he knew of me, you know, specifically, but, you know, obviously, you know, an agent like that, they have real attitude problems, you know, and here I am, I pull up, I have, you know, five cameras running, you know, one pointing right at the agent at primary. I've got my windows rolled up except for, you know, a very small amount, just enough to converse at the top there. And I just sit there and they ask questions and I don't say a word to them, you know, and that pisses off a lot of these guys that have security, you know, the authority complex there where, you know, I am God and you will, you know, do what I say when I say it. And when people like me come along and don't comply and don't, you know, cooperate with them, that tends to piss them off fairly quickly. You know, and within about 30 seconds of that stop, he had grabbed a spike strip and thrown it down in front of my vehicle. And then, you know, the supervisor comes over and he's backing up his agent at primary while they're sending a guy over to the county deputy to come over and start harassing me. So this is the way it goes every once in a while.
You go, just give me the ticket. I'll see you in court. Arrest me. Take calls, supervisor, some of this rock and roll and get this moving on so I don't have to edit so much video. I mean, you know, can we rock? It's a long time. When you guys do this 3-hour thing, I'm sitting in the edit bay for a while here, you know, or you just run the whole thing anyway. But this is, so what's it doing now? I mean, how are we now? Is it getting any better? Or are they just taking Terry Bressy's class and doing it differently and filling out the right forms and they rule us? I mean, what's happening?
Well, you know, the checkpoint issue has actually gotten a fair amount of coverage in the mainstream media over the past year. In fact, I've been probably interviewed about 10 times or so since the last time we talked by everyone from John Stossel's show to This American Life to, you know, the Houston Chronicle. Those types of entities have been showing a lot more interest in these issues. And after This American Life segment played back in late last year, the agents at the checkpoint that I go through on a regular basis have been far less aggressive than they have in the past. Every once in a while, I get an agent who, like you said, hasn't gotten the memo there, and he'll start something, and then off in the distance, you'll hear the supervisor say, "It's Bressy. Wave him through. Wave him through." You know, so normally there's a supervisor there, and if the agent at primary doesn't know the score, certainly the supervisors do. And the supervisors, at least at this stage, don't really want to
fill out paperwork. There you go, man. There's Terry. Man, I got months of paperwork. I'm dealing in court and paperwork and all kinds of people and calling. Didn't I know? And how can I not keep my guys under control in paperwork? I get it. You know, it's just you're causing them a ruckus. And they at first they want to get some. And I'm going, you know, nobody will rise up. And you got a nail sticking up. I got a hammer, you know. So then after a while, they're like, damn it. You know, this, damn it. So I'm wondering, it's not just the Southwest that you're well known. I guarantee, man, checkpointusa.org, this is, man, you're in Washington. They got a little file for you.
Oh, I have no doubt. But, you know, the problem is, this is all, you know, yeah, they may be backing off a little bit on me, but other people are getting, you know, the full brunt of the unlawful assault.
Yeah, the community that lives near the border. What's the name of that community that they're finally, the whole town, because you can't leave or go. I went down there. It was D. Luspy has a B thing down there and so on. You get down to this one small area, and if you live there, you're driving out of your driveway, you're a freaking checkpoint. You can't go to work, go home, go to the store, come back without having to constantly go through this checkpoint. And they finally like, hell no. I'm wondering where that's going.
Yeah, you know, down in Aravaca and Amato, you know, they're about 25 miles or so north of the border. And they can't, like you said, their residents, they can't leave their communities without going through a checkpoint. They can't go to the store. They can't go to, you know, to the hospital. They can't visit friends and family. They can't go to Tucson or whatever without being stopped, seized, detained, interrogated, and potentially searched by armed Border Patrol agents who aren't actually patrolling the border. You know, it's ridiculous. Their children, their school buses get stopped and boarded by agents on a regular basis.
Kids
get interrogated.
Oh.
Now, what kind of country is this that we allow this type of behavior from our government representatives, you know, from government agents? It's ridiculous. And people who appreciate what this country is supposed to be about shouldn't stand for this kind of crap.
Yeah, but they got Trump saying immigrants and build the wall. Okay, I'm wondering if we get this wall thing done, you know, the fences in, are they going to stop the Border Patrol or are they going to get worse?
Agencies like the DEA love the Border Patrol because they can conduct drug checkpoints inside the country under the guise of immigration. So, you know.
Oh, I'm glad Terry Bressy's out there. Checkpointusa.org. You know, just go check it out. It's just constant as his hobby. You know, his hobby. You know, go to the archive. I'm going to ask him, you know, how his wife's holding up on this. We'll be right back. In the next hour, we got Derek Morse. Now, he's going to talk to us about new concrete.
So the protection of life.
Okay. Mom says what?
Oh, geez. You know, she's worried every time I have to go up to Kip Peak, you know, so... yeah, she's not a big fan of, you know, the...
Are you texting her? You're like, made it!
Right, exactly. You know, I do the phone check-in, you know, every time coming and going there, you know, that, yeah, I'm up and, you know, I'm coming back and you can expect me at this time. And if I'm not around, then you know who to call, you know. So.
Wow. Who do you use in as an attorney on all this stuff? Or are you just doing most of it yourself?
You know, at this stage, I'm doing it mostly on my own there. But if the need ever arises, I certainly know who to go to for legal assistance. You know.
Well, I know. See, Mark did the criminal the first time, and then David did the civil. And then when you have your current problems, do you go to either one of those? You got another guy or what?
Yeah, the current problems that I've had have been low level enough that I've handled them on my own. So, like I said, I've been to, you know, justice court on three separate occasions, and I've represented myself, and I've won each time.
And, well, do they know you're going to win, or do they care, or they're just inconveniencing, or it's just they go, well, I don't care, I get paid taxpayer money to be here anyway. I mean, you know, what's their attitude?
Sure. You know, it's funny. Two of those three cases, the deputy or the officer actually showed up. One of them, he didn't show up for the proceedings. But in the two that they did, you know, within the, you know, like the first case was actually a tribal police officer, and he gave a 5-minute spiel. And then, you know, I had walked in with about 100 pages worth of documentation, you know, that I had presented to the court clerk, you know, before things started, you know, and whatnot. And I could see the judge was, you know, going through it, you know, during the time frame that the officer was giving his testimony there, you know, and she wouldn't even let me speak during that first incident. Before I even had a chance to say a word, after she had flipped through my documentation, she dismissed the charges against me. After profusely apologizing to the police officer and thanking him for all his hard work, you know, so that type of crap. But she knew what the score was and knew that it would look very bad for him if I was able to speak. The second case, the deputy never even showed up. In the last case, 2014, oh, now that was fun. You guys should have been there to witness that, because he actually showed up and thought he had a case against me. And that hearing that was initially scheduled for 5 minutes lasted over an hour, and I was able to cross. I was able to, you know, interrogate him for about 20-25 minutes there before I gave my 25-minute spiel.
Wow!
I laid out the entire history of what had been going on there, and his biggest claim was that, oh yeah, you know, this citation. He had cited me for honking my horn, right? So after the agent at primary, Hackett had thrown down a spike strip in front of my vehicle, I started beeping the horn because I wanted to get the attention of the supervisor, and I wanted to get the attention of the deputy, saying, hey, you know,
well, heck,
this
that's free speech or something. I mean, you can make an easy case just free speech on it, couldn't you?
Right, and that was part of my defense, but there is a statute, an Arizona statute, that makes it illegal to honk your horn for anything other than, like, emergency purposes, where if you're not trying to...
Emergency! This guy's terrorist, police state scumbag!
Exactly. And there's actually case law with regards to the First Amendment issues for honking your horn. But what I brought forward when I went to court on this issue was that when that agent decided to illegally extend the detention of me in the primary lane of traffic, he was putting myself and everybody else at that checkpoint at risk, because checkpoints cause accidents. And I had like 5 or 6 cases from around the country where people had been killed at checkpoints and roadblocks because, you know, some doofus, you know, driving along at 65 miles an hour doesn't see the sign for the roadblock, and he slams into somebody, you know, waiting in the line of traffic to be processed there. So, you know, they're actually putting you at risk by stopping you along a highway where the normal traffic flow is 65 miles an hour.
So this, and, so their whole case, they just, you know, everything they tried, you know, had case law and say, no, and you're scumbags. So, you know, the judge just didn't want to piss off who? I mean, I'm not sure what the reasoning was. How'd they rule in your favor when they didn't have to? I mean, what was the overwhelming evidence that you had?
Oh,
cumulative?
Sure. It was cumulative, and he didn't rule in my favor right then. He said he'd take it under advisement and then get back to me. And of course, you know, after the hearing was over, I contacted Dave and I said, hey, Dave, you know, this is how, you know, things went down. He said, oh, so he took it under advisement. That means you won. He just didn't want to tell the police officer that he was a low-life scumbag, you know, to his face in the actual court there. So, the issue is, I think they know who I am, and they know that if they
you'll will appeal and appeal and appeal
and I'll appeal and I'll appeal exactly. So at some level, I'm going to get satisfaction, and in the meantime, I'm going to be taking up a whole lot of the court's time, you know, and making things look kind of embarrassing during the process. So, you know, if you go in with good, firm legal arguments. You have a history of being able to, you know, defend yourself
and video
in court and video, you know, it's, you can actually, you know, win if you can call it a win in terms of, you know, the time and effort you have to put into the.
Yeah. But I mean, this is as I saw what was happening as you were doing this over these years. It's been over 10 years, you know, 12 years or so we've been doing this. And I go, yeah, I can see what you're doing, Terry. You're just educating them. They're going, damn it. You know, the stroke dash form of we didn't fill out. Okay, we'll fill that out. Well, we didn't have the okay, we'll do that. And you're helping them refine the police state.
Well, you know, Ernie, the bottom line is the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. You know,
I'm hip.
There is no silver bullet. There is nothing that any of us can do, you know, pull out any document, any phrase, anything that will stop this. The only thing that will stop it is people that are willing to hold the people who claim to have authority over us accountable.
I'm glad you're doing it. Hey, I got to get to my next guest, man. I'm running right into my next hour. Hey, Terry, we got to do this soon, man.
Sure.
All right. Love you, brother. Bye.
Take care.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear. I declare your independence from Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Derek Morse. All right, Derek Morse. We use a young man we met up a vacation up in Washington. He's the son of a friend of a friend, and we're kind of all hanging and partying and laking and kayaking and shooting and exploring ATVing and, you know, wildernizing, you know, and grizzly petting and stuff. So we're having a good time. We got to know each other a little bit. Cool guy. And what does he do? Something of interest that we have covered in the past, you know, building techniques and different materials and talk about it and not talk, and he's doing it. And I'm going, okay, we got to do a show. This is going to be good. All right. Derek Morse lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm going to show you some of the graphics up here. You start to see what we're talking about. And he has been involved in the building design and construction industry since 2006. In 2011, he worked along with his boss and boss's two sons to advance the idea of prefabricated masonry and the use of energy-efficient building materials like autoclaved aerated concrete under a newly formed company, Brothers and Bricks, LLC. Brothers and Bricks, along with Constructive LLC, who holds the patent rights to their developed technology, have been at the forefront in the development of prefabricated masonry and have conducted extensive R&D as well as testing different material for stress and structural durability. This past year, Brothers and Bricks successfully completed construction on a new 1,700-square-foot home in Milford. The first in, I guess, Michigan, the first prefabricated residential house of its kind built using the newly patented technology and the implementation of energy efficient AAC. Now, AAC, what it really is, you ever go and you see the spray foam that they put in and it expands and it fills and it's insulated? Well, it's kind of like that with concrete. and they put it in to either forms or bricks or whatever it is that they do, and it kind of expands, and it's heated. Autoclave, it's heated. A lot of the graphics you'll see up here is that it goes through a process by which it expands. It has air. It's, you know, the R value is way up there, and then they kind of slap it together and put it together, and all of a sudden it's together, and they go deliver it and put it together and house and done. Prefabricated, it's like a Palm Harbor 2x6 home that they put together, and then that's together, except masonry and with new space age technology. All right, we're going to go to Derek and say hello. Hi, Derek.
Hey, how are you doing there, Ernie?
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be awesome. Okay.
I'm glad to be on the show. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, this is man. You're making me look good. This is what I need. You know, make me look good with new. Because I've been talking about this kind of stuff before. A lot of the audience, I'm going, look, it's all about materials. You know, it's all about, you know, combining. Now, what you've done is that to make this work is that you've come up with a new type of material to use in prefabricated masonry construction, and then go on site and boom and Lego block it together. But you're also using carbon fiber in some way to make this thing work. Walk me through the process of what we're doing here, and maybe with the pictures and your description, people understand how important this is.
Okay, yeah. What basically the concept is taking it's traditionally built on site with, you know, a crew and, you know, labor contractor, superintendent, you know, supervising over it. We've taken into and implemented the ability to build it in a factory setting, place it on, you know, a truck, ship it to the job site and erect it in, you know, erector set type deal, which cuts down on the cost and everything. And the way we're able to do that is we're using carbon fiber as a means of structurally supporting the wall or wall system while it's being lifted, transported, and you know, placed and erected on the site. And you couldn't do that before, because when you put any type of concrete or masonry material under tensile force, it will just crack and bend. I mean, you can put as much compressive force on it as you would want.
Okay, now this is why.
Yeah, go ahead.
And well, this is why in masonry and concrete construction, you look at a bridge, and if you mm-hmm. see it before they pour the concrete, heck, it's almost all rebar and steel, you know?
Yeah, so it's all reinforcing agent, yeah.
The rebar and steel is the tensile, the pulling strength.
Yeah, it's basically the skeleton of the bridge, and then the concrete does add some structural support, but it's basically just a pad to drive over, but the
well, it's compressive. I mean, you know, yeah. It's like you got the masonry. If you got, you know, this masonry wall will hold, you know, 40 stories of whatever the heck. I mean, you know, you put the pressure on it and you're going one, two stories. It's not that big a deal. But the mm-hmm. thing is that when you're transporting or pulling it or holding it or suspending it, you're doing here, it'll just separate. So I'm mm-hmm. wondering, you know, is there like a threaded rod or something that goes from the carbon fiber beam at the bottom and then compressed to the top, and it comes as a unit? I mean, how is this? You're suspending it looks like a prison cell block of a four-walled with a door thing from four bolts on the corners, and then you got a truck driving over a beam that's just looks like cinder blocks on end. And I'm going, this is like space age stuff here. Tell me what's going on.
The way we're able to do it is those post rods are actually, it's what's called post tensioning, is you have two plates on each end, and then you use a ram, or you can even use a wrench to tighten it down, and that puts the block wall under compression, and that actually helps hold it together and then the carbon fiber, is along on the inside of the wall. We figured out a way of getting it in there in a means where the carbon's actually, it's part of our technology, but it's already under tensile stress when it's placed in there. I can't really go too into, because some of the patents are still going through nature of it. But the carbon fiber takes all the tensile and shear stress on the wall, and the rods or those steel.
Okay, now what about the actual blocks themselves? The blocks are Are they have carbon fiber in them? Or are they just made of styrofoam? Or are they light?
Those
or they
look standard, like standard, what's called a concrete masonry unit or cinder block, CMU is what it's called. And they're just standard blocks that you can pick up at the Home Depot or any.
Okay, wait. So you're saying, see, I did not know that. Okay, now what you're saying is that these cinder blocks or the bricks or whatever mm-hmm. that are there, these are standard regular blocks.
Those on a lot of those pictures, I didn't have as many as I could. I wanted to get there on a different file or a different computer, I should say, of the autoclave or not? Excuse me. Yeah, the autoclave area concrete stuff that we've done. But there are some photos on there. I'm not sure. I'm not looking at the later website right now. But there, I did label them. So Donna might be able to mark those up a little bit better.
I'll probably be able to see them here, but. But these are regular cinder blocks that are under
regular
compression.
Cinder block, and we also are what I see in the future is using our technology in the autoclave aerated concrete, I guess route, so to speak, because of the it has so many immense benefits in terms of energy efficiency, the weight in terms of shipping, the different configurations you can put together, and just how everything
That's one thing that I didn't understand. I didn't know that you were using. I knew you had this shot in concrete expands kind of stuff, and it's more insulated and it's lighter and easier to work and so on. But I didn't know you were also using similar techniques to do regular cinder blocks. I'm going.
Yeah, that's actually what spawned us to go into AAC is once we had the technology for the normal cinder blocks.
Wow. We'll be right back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Yeah, I had to go to the bathroom, get some coffee. Okay, we'll be back in about 20 seconds here, 30 seconds. What I need, the next stage, we'll go ahead and go through the autoclave process and talk about that material. And then we'll get into the what. So you started with the cinder block doing this first, prefabricated that. Then you went to the autoclave because, it's easier to do, I guess. So that when it does that, do you do walls or blocks?
We do the autoclave area AAC. They come in a couple different. They're called jumbo blocks because the weight of them is about a quarter. The weight is the same size of a standard concrete block.
All right, here we're coming back. Here we go. Yeah.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and you can do it all by yourself. You don't need me. I declare my independency. How easy it was. No government form. I bet there's a lot of government forms in construction, though. One thing that I want to try and find out is, as you're developing this process and you go, wow, this is better, faster, cheaper, more reliable. Oh, my God, we can do and build and reconstruct the entire world. And the government says, got a permit, get a license. Do we approve of that particular thing? Has that come up? I mean, what are the inspectors and so on saying about this new method?
For the most part, some building code officials have been, real
buttheads.
Taking it. They've been either real good or they're completely against it. Sometimes I guess you make them do their job and they get mad.
Well, why are they against it? Are they against it because, yeah, where's the spec of the, you know, some laboratory of said an agency have said I'm not going to be in trouble because I approved something I don't understand and I don't want to.
Yeah, I think that's more of the case. They're worried about them approving something that, you know, ends up failing, I guess.
So where do you go to get some kind of standard testing of it's better?
In
Michigan.
Basically, you use the companies that actually there's one company in the U.S. that's even producing it now. There were a few years ago, but it's called Aircon, and they give you pretty much all the material characteristics of it in terms of like the strength, like the stresses.
So it's gone through far enough in the process,
and you basically approach it as you would any other building, and all the loads and calculations and all the stuff are basically exactly the same, but the only difference is that the effective efficiency, which is what we measure the efficiency of walls in terms of the R value, which is the resistance to heat transfer or heat flow from one side of the wall to the other, and the higher the R value, the better is how it's scaled. And you actually, with how they do the testing, they take a heat source at one side at a controlled temperature, and then over a longer period of time, I don't know specifically the length it is, but they measure the temperature on the other side, and that's what they use to determine the R value of the wall by how much the temperature changes on the side where they're measuring the temperature.
Well, it's not just the R value. They're looking for strength and how it... I mean, yeah, I saw you winch it over here and carry it and crane it and drop it and plop it and dropped it and kind of it still works.
You're talking about in terms of our technology and what they think of the strength and,
Yeah, they're going to, you get a, I order your house. See, this is what I'm thinking of. In the turn of the century, it used to be you could order a house from the Sears catalog. I mean, you're out in here in Phoenix. We go down, there's what's called the Rawson House, I think it is. It's a Victorian home built 100 and whatever years ago that's still in downtown Phoenix. And you get to tour it, and this is how, and how did they survive in the heat? Well, they didn't live here, or they did this and waved that and had servant, whatever the heck. So you go in and you watch this thing, and what they would do is they would order it, and it would come, on a train, and it would, get loaded, and mules would bring it over, an ox cart or whatever the heck. And they would construct it from prefabricated pieces, and they called them painted ladies. They were just real ornate and nice in these Victorian kind of homes. Well, these went all over the country, and how they did that is they, had it all cut and pre-done and everything, and you go and you construct it. So now I'm going, well, what were the building permitters saying then? There weren't any. I mean, the house stayed up, and people bought them, or they didn't, and they're still there. So now when you start doing this prefabricated, and I push a button on the internet, and I want a house and a cabin up in the whatever, and it shows up, and I start putting it together, and it comes from Michigan to Arizona, I'm just wondering how much crap I got to go through with the man.
Yeah, one thing that I need to point out, in terms of the things you just mentioned, the... when you have the design and everything done, you have the engineer who did the drawings. As long as they're stamped drawings, by the engineer, then the building departments kind of just sign off on it because the engineer is actually the one responsible in terms of the.
Okay, so that's what they're looking for, is an engineering stamp, but that's, go switch for I sign here.
Yeah, and very few are familiar enough, engineers are familiar enough with it to even, take on the responsibility of doing drawings or even doing anything.
Okay, let's talk about the autoclave process, and do the autoclave walls, are they made into bricks or just entire walls?
Autoclave walls. Well, they come in all different types of forms. Like you can get floor panels, roof panels, wall panels, lintels, and you use for in just conventional building. They're called jumbo blocks, which is 2 foot long by 8 inches high. Is compared to a standard CM or concrete center block, which is 16 inches long and 8 inches high. So they're, because they're about a quarter of the weight is a standard block, concrete block, and how it's done is the components are basically very similar to standard concrete, but they use a aluminum powder or paste in the slurry when they mix all the materials together, and then they place that mixture into a steel mold, which actually when the that aluminum powder reacts with some of the components in the mixture, and it rises up sort of like bread would in the oven.
Why, does it create gas or air pockets? Or
yep,
is it
yep, and those, the aluminum, sorry, they create air bubbles, basically, which permeate or go throughout. As it rises, those air bubbles, some of them, you know, escape, but a lot, most of them don't permeate through the surface. So
it's like concrete styrofoam.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, that's a great way of explaining it. Yeah, it's basically like concrete styrofoam in those, and that will rise up in that mold, and then that it will be about 3 hours later, I believe. It's able to hold kind of its shape if you don't put too much, you know, stress or anything on it, and that goes slides into an autoclave, which is basically a hot pressurized oven. That it bakes in there for about 12 hours and under temperature and pressure about 360-ish degrees, I believe, and like 170-some PSI, somewhere in that nature. But and then after that, you're able to cut it, like with a cheese wire, how you would cut cheese, basically into whatever shape you desire. So, you can have, you know, all types of abstract shapes if you really...
As you get all these autoclaves and you do the capital investment of we're making bricks, you know, you're using the walls really as a demonstration model for we be the brick makers.
Yeah, there's so many things that are possible.
So somebody's got to buy the stuff and got it stuff and the raw material, the stuff and finish the stuff. And that's what you guys be doing. All right, well, we're going to find out more about this new technology when we come back. Yeah, this is going well. Okay, now the actual autoclave mechanism that you're doing, is that on site?
No, we buy all the AAC from the supplier, which is Aircon. They're the only ones in the United States that produce it right now. There were two of them.
Is there anybody else doing what you're doing, you know, doing prefab walls?
Not that I am aware of. In terms of
okay, so they supply the material, but the thing was is that you go, we need something better than cinder block, and you find these guys. Are they in Michigan?
No, they're actually in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got transport costs too. I mean, that's,
yeah.
Do you see this mechanism being or this method being replicated? Are they starting to build other autoclaves and so on around the country?
Not necessarily. To be honest with you, I think that it's being kind of suppressed by other, you know, industries that are currently, like timber and all. I mean, the currently, you know, reigning building methods.
I can see that there. It's in a campaign of we don't like that because we don't like it. You know, I'm sure that's going on. But it doesn't matter if you start getting this technology out to where it even gets smaller. I'm baking it in my backyard until I get enough to build my own house.
The only thing, like the cost of the initial startup cost of an AAC plant is in the millions of dollars. Like the autoclaves are what are so expensive.
Yeah, see, that's one thing. I mean, certainly when you have this Agenda 21 homogenized of every building code in every county, it's got to be the same, and it basically is one push button of no, you're not allowed, and we rule you. You know, I can see that centralization allows them to suppress this kind of technology. And I'm going, and it's not based on any, you know, real evidence of they shouldn't do it, and I'm just for freedom of just get out of my way and let me do it, because I can see if I can have expanding cured concrete, that means I can make Lego blocks of anything I want.
Yep, exactly.
And then you have the, and when we come back, I want to get to the what kind of mortar you're using. Because a lot of these here are the cinder block thing. See, the technique, even if you're just using cinder blocks without this new technique, the ability to do prefab masonry, I'll guarantee freaking tea there's some masonry union somebody bitching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's some block companies are real opposed to it, and some see the the benefit of like that they're truly like they can sell more product. In my opinion, it's just it's being used in a different manner.
Yeah, I'm wondering what why prefab of cinder block concrete walls. What brought that on? Carbon fiber made that possible, or
my boss just had the idea. Just came to him one day, like put it, and he just. He can't really explain it. It's just a vision, I guess.
Well, no, it's a 12-year-old vision. You're going, well, hey, how come I can't just, make these and do it and transport and kind of, and they go, well, you can't because if you can't and you can't, and, oh, okay. And then the smart kids go, no, I can too. And they go, damn it, we didn't want them to do that, So it's just, I just see this. It's why I don't have my flying car, man. Damn government.
One engineer had a good, funny comment about my boss. He's like, some people, they can only think inside the box, and some people they can think out of the box. But he's like, I've always said that you don't have a box.
Yeah, there you go. All right, hold on. Here we go.
Liberty oriented audio streamed around the clock on the air and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence from the Ernest Hancock and Phoenix, Arizona. Hello to Derek Morse. I was really fascinated with all the information that he was giving. We were talking, what do you do? And I prefab and work and make and houses and new material of all the stuff that I've been talking about with you guys for years. And I go, oh, Donna, let's get that boy on the radio. And he had some photos. I found it fascinating that you have. Now, what we found out in the break is the autoclave, expanded concrete, kind of light, whatever, in Michigan. They're having to get it from the only company doing this now. There's a couple now down to one out of Florida with millions of dollars. When you look at these big ovens, it's like industrial. Oh, my God. So I'm going, okay, so we're going to go ahead and learn about how we're getting that made from them. It's transported up to Michigan, making prefab walls that's going to build homes. Now, I'm wondering, if you're doing this prefab really fast, making it go whir and under strength, that kind of, it's better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, this is better. Well, who's not saying it's better? I bet you it's a masonry union of you're freaking not allowed because you're not allowed.
We say so.
Well, is it who's the advocates? Is there a lobby support for you? Got all these people for, we need better energy in building and for the poor people, and they're going no. So I'm wondering who's the advocate for you guys? Just the industry and you guys?
To be honest with you, we're kind of a lone wolf out there, lone soldier, I should say, and it's not really being, embraced by many trades or industries, the industry in general.
Well, because they don't want hassles from the man. That they, it's going to be individuals. It's not, let me put it this way. It's not going to be Del Webb comes up and we're going to do the entire Sun City and we're going to do this because it's cool and faster and cheaper and better and we're going to do that. And they go, no, you're not because we're the government. And you go, well, a delay will get, and you go through the fight, and somebody, then they're the ones that are the lawyers and the resources in the fight to get this done. So I'm wondering, as you try to get this become a building option for a lot of contractors and so on, I'm going, all right, what are you having to go to? Are you having to file suit? Are you having to go to court? Are you having to do engineering? What is it you're having to do to even be able to do
it? Yeah, basically, we're having to do our own from the ground up, the other or the company that holds the patent rights and everything, that we have our own lawyer and engineer and designer and things of that nature that basically are the ones out there fighting the front line against man, I guess, to demonstrate the, you know, the potential, what it is, and, you know, how it can be used to, you know.
You're picking up a four-wall building, you know, showing it one solid block of whatever.
Some people, they don't believe, like, they will tell them about it or even show them a picture, and they won't believe. They'll think the photo's, doctored or until you're actually, like, right there, even a photo can't do it, like, justice to me.
Okay, now, the way that this, you're able to keep a cinder block, you hang a cinder block building, and it's a one-unit Legoed kind of whatever. You're using, with the cinder blocks, you're using standard masonry, right?
Yep. And those are, those cinder blocks are your standard ones that you would get at Home Depot. And that all the blocks in there are actually, you can't really see them on the photos, but they're not filled or grouted solid or anything. They're all hollow block. Just as you would.
That's amazing. Well, to do this and to compress it, you have to have, like, threaded bolts. I mean, a threaded rod rebar.
That's what they are. Yep, threaded rebar.
And you're compressing the crap out of it. And then the bottom is supported by carbon fiber beams of some kind, you're saying. Describe these carbon fiber beams to us.
Well, basically, we have carbon fiber along the bottom, and it creates a solid platform, I guess, that can be built upon when suspended.
Well, how thick is this? Sorry, describe the beam. Is it thick, wide, you know, is it corrugated, and what?
I don't know how detailed I can get, but I would say that the carbon fiber is continually through the bottom course, and it's adhered or placed in there in a certain manner.
So patent pending.
Well,
the other thing is that we when you have the blocks that they make, these, I don't know, 10 by 20 whatever it is, blocks, and you put them together, what adhesive or mortar or whatever, how are you putting them together, and are they interlocked in some way, or are they just flat and they're glued together? I mean, what's the mortar that you're using?
When it comes to the standard concrete block, it's just, you know, your standard mortar that you'd use on any job or,
See, that's what makes this unbelievable. They look at a big four-wall building you're holding up with standard cinder blocks and standard mortar. You're going, damn.
Standard material is just different technology that allows it to.
When you put these together, are you putting the wall together vertically, or is it laying down horizontally?
No, we put it together vertically, and what we have is basically build beams, which are level, flat surface that you're building that first course, and then you build up from there.
So you get a perfect wall.
You know, we plan to get the some funding together, but you would do it so that the wall itself would actually raise and lower in front of you, so the mason or the people working on it would always be at their working height. You
wouldn't have to set up score! So you don't have to go up in platforms and up and down and all that. And you just prefab and have the wall go up and down.
You
know, that is awesome!
Everything there, quality control. You never have rain, you know, weather issues. The climate's consistent. I mean,
oh, hell no, you're pissing off somebody. okay. So the adhesive that you're putting together is what?
Yeah, and the adhesive for AAC, it uses a different type of mortar. It's called thinset or thin bed mortar. It's you that's it,
for like tile or something.
Yeah, it's kind of exactly. It's like what you would lay like tile. It's kind of that consistency it basically is glue for the blocks, the AAC blocks. And
so you're just squeezing it out. How?
Pores and more, and then it kind of chemically bonds and also physically bonds it.
Does it come out as a tube or a caulk gun?
No, you mix it up just like you would a normal, like, mortar. It comes in bags, and you just use water. Mix it with water, spinning around in a mixer or your paddle drill in a bucket, and lay it as you would.
It's
actually much quicker and faster to build a wall with AAC, because you're just laying a really thin layer on the top of the block, and then you're stacking and making sure it's aligned. It's like this
easy gluing.
Yeah, it's easy gluing. Yeah,
Legos. I mean, you know, does it? Are there designs that have blocks that have like little tabs in it so that it, you know, exactly fits into something?
Of the blocks, they come with a core drilled through it. So if you're building and you need vertical or horizontal reinforcement, you would lay out the course, and then you would drop a steel rod or rebar down it, and then you would fill that with concrete grout, and that would give you your load.
Well, you have to have some kind of hole. Are you guys drilling holes or something to do your compression cinching down thing?
You don't need it for the standard block, but for CMU, we are drilling down through the.
How long have you guys been doing this? These prefab kind of making things.
We've been, you know, going along since 2011, basically when we started.
Is it a lot of problems in acceptance? I mean, is this where your holdup is? Is it just, you know, the man?
Basically, funding, I guess, for a big, or to be able to do it in a large scale. Like, we're kind of been...
This is where, the beginning. You want to look for the beginning? Where's the beginning? This is the beginning.
Yeah.
We're bringing it to you.
That's right.
Yeah, no, this is, I'm definitely interested. There's a lot of other design features that they put in here. You can get kind of funky with the block. I guess you're demonstrating things that you can do. So when you get the first home and so on, is this one of yours or a friend? Or, hey, if we do this and we'll give you a deal, if we can do a demonstration of whatever, or they just hear about you, calling you and say, hey, come do it?
Well, the first home that we finished this past year was for my boss's mother. So,
yeah, I'm looking at the one on the flat.
She about wanted to be the guinea pig, I guess, and we needed something that would, an actual model to show the actual.
Yeah, you can do different designs, different colors, different. Oh, I mean, it's amazing.
It's truly endless with what. The customization of it.
Okay, now let me ask this one thing. I'm looking at a flatbed, and it has, looks like cinder block beams, and these beams are strong enough that open underneath them, you're doing tie down straps, pulling it down to hold it in place.
Yeah, it's truly like
cinder block beams.
It's crazy. It doesn't seem to, even to me, when I even like
be possible.
Look at it. I'm like real, like when I'm moving something with a crane or something, I'm always real cautious, but like they can to set it down real carefully. But I mean, we've dropped them like a beam from, I think, 3-4 feet up, and it didn't, the only thing that broke on it was the end of it, chipped off, like the continuation of the beam stayed.
That is amazing. That's like bridges.
Yep.
Okay, so this is was just being tested by the owner. You just say, I want to do this, and he's committed. He's going to see it through, and they're just who can outlast who?
I'm sorry.
It's kind of like the government, making it difficult, and he's like, no, I'm going to do it. Well, we're going to make it hard for you to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and put up obstacles. Go through them.
Well, how are they funding this? So the resource you got, they do other things that kind of,
A lot of the things we've done has been, we've kind of got, by doing repair jobs on some older buildings that have, their whole wall is structurally failed, and doing a complete replacement. Like, I think there's one, where we're putting a roof panel dropping down in one of those photos. A tree got hit by lightning or something and fell on that's a school, and it crushed in that top, and during the winter break we were able to put that in, and that actually put the whole thing in one day, so they were able to continue their school schedule as normal.
Okay, I'm
one thing I do want to try and if we mentioned like the just kind of like guide me towards like the future, I have like a kind of real blow your mind vision of how it can be used.
I'm all over it. Yeah. I tell you what, when we come back, I will make emphasis on the school thing, you know, and how, you know, it's faster than doing kind of one thing, boom, done. Mm-hmm. And then and I'll throw it to you with the future, and you can help us out. All right, we'll be back in 15 seconds. Here we go.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Fun, and I go, yeah, it's all very interesting. I want you to download me on all the goodies, because just, you know, in casual conversation, you kind of, and what do you do? And I'm doing, oh, wait. What? I'm going, oh, this is awesome. I'm waiting on this. I mean, because we've been talking about since the 90s, you know, things called papercrete. You just take paper and you do the pulp and you add, you know, concrete, a little sand and this. Now, all of a sudden, you got a light block. You make them in whatever shape you want, and you kind of use the same papercrete as the mortar, and you kind of blop, 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 blop. What if you prefab that and did a wall? You know, and the autoclave brick, you know, that probably coat and cinder block, or you can do that coat. But what if I can put under compression and do the same thing and rip them off with my papercrete tank? So I'm going, okay, well, you know, I'm for doing that. You know, I can rip you off. Now, one thing that he did, I want to show this. We'll go to now this right here. This is, freaks me out. You got a bed truck and you have a one course of a cinder block. You'll see that. That has to be at least 25 feet long. And they got it just sticking out with straps on it, pulling it down to keep it tight. This is like a beam made of cinder block under compression. I'm going, okay. So then what did they have? They have a school that, you know, a tree came down and crushed the roof. And during the winter break, what do? They go, yeah, we can do that. We can prefab and kind of treat them, put it down, boom, day, done. Yeah, well, you know, the contract didn't make $1 billion. Well, I mean, it probably did. It just didn't cost him much. Made more profit. You know, as they ripped us off. So I'm going, okay, so now we got, you know, the future. We kind of got a beat on this. I'm going, all right. So where does this go in the future? We prefabbing the seasteading, going numb on the ocean space station thing? What?
You're pretty close on the ocean part. This is kind of a vast, you know, vision of what I can see in the future, is that you're able to produce units which are similar to what you saw in that the jail cell, the four walls and the door on some of the photos, but you producing that using AAC, and then you would say there's a need for disaster relief, you know, another tsunami hit, you know, who knows where, on the coast or whatever, you could be able to provide temporary or even permanent housing to areas overseas. You build them wherever and ship them, and you would
assemble,
make them the size of shipping containers, so that you you're shipping a complete, basically small home. The energy costs to run it on utilities or anything of that nature are minimal. You can have your, you know, air conditioning unit, your, you know, water filtration, whatever. You got solar panels on the top and the inside when you're shipping them. Then you'd be able to stack them together, put them on site, put them in any type of array you so please, and it could provide, you know, temporary housing.
You could ship it as a container.
And here's one of the other things is that you don't need power or any type of other. You can put these in just the most remote locations. Like, you can put it on the top of Everest, or in, you know, heck, if you made it waterproof, put it at the Mariana Trench. I don't know. but the future in terms of what you can do, how you can, the different applications that it can be applied on, the customization of the ability to do, you know, intricate designs, different types of, structure, or not structures, but, you know, just a whole bunch of, there's just a plethora of ways that you can just create your own.
Well, the shipping container concept is, I mean, it gets to the point, the strength of this thing. Hell, it could be the shipping container,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that at first you probably have to go make it fit in the shipping container because there are regulations for shipping. But,
well, the thing is they're using shipping containers themselves.
Yeah, you'd be able to lift it up just like you would a normal shipping. Just put the,
Well, I've seen them do shipping containers as homes and so on, but they're not insulated. I mean, you know, they get hot, cold, and so then you got to do a bunch of stuff to them anyway, and then you got the cost of that. It seems like, with this as a
one unit,
just boom, done.
And it'd have all your, necessary utilities are like inside the building. You can put it, your air conditioning unit or whatever.
Well, I tell you, this thing can fit on an 18-wheeler flatbed, or it fits on a rail car, and the size of the shipping container, probably you can go even bigger. Yeah. But let's say you do that. A lot of people are buying these. They are buying these to be able to make multi-story kind of Lego block home of whatever. And with your system, you could just build these units and customize and plumbing and have them. It's all done in the factory and
give everything, your electrical.
Well, screw that building guide permit. People kind of just make them. Make them. I want one.
Get off that grid.
Well, a wall that's 8 foot by, let's say, 12 foot long, 8 foot high, just a wall with this, mechanism. What's the cost of that compared to traditional making? Are you saving money?
You're basically, what it ends up equating to is it's basically exactly the same, because if you were to build an 8 foot by 12 foot wall on site using standard concrete block, the building material, it's about one, I guess, it depends on how the quantity and how much you get it, but it's about $1.15 to like $1.25 for standard CMU for square foot concrete, standard construction, and it's about $2.50 for square foot for AAC. But the thing is that your labor time is cut down significantly. I would say probably by a third ish. But to be able to have the same thermal or energy efficiency, when you build a concrete wall, you're going to have to put an insulation and then a drywall, like a foam insulation on the outside and then siding and then drywall or something on the inside. With the AAC, you're able to build the wall and then do whatever type of outer siding you want. There's a bunch of different application for like stucco or different you can do texturized on the outside, and on the inside you can get it all thin and do whatever you want. You can actually the AAC is truly like a remarkable material, but you can use regular like hand woodworking tools to cut it, shape it, like you get a rasp or something that would basically
actually. Oh, hell, I just get a hand router thing, make a groove, put the conduit into it, the electrical, and I'm done.
Yep. Yep.
And that's kind of the papercrete thing. That's what was one of the big, draws of that, but it doesn't have the tensile strength that this does in the way the building method that you're using here. I'm just like, this is fascinating.
Yeah, and just for the cost analysis thing, that when you put a 2-inch foam board, that stuff's really good. It's like $36 for, I believe, like a 4x8 sheet of a 2-inch or Dow or BASFF, whatever you're using. So that's a little, that's like a dollar, a little over a dollar.
So the savings, you're going to make some profit on this, but the savings is coming in the labor, it's coming in the energy value, it's coming in.
You don't need extra materials to have your wall be usable.
So I'm going to Harbor Freight and I can make it happen, okay? All right.
Yeah.
Or not. But, I know you guys all freak out. Everybody goes to Harbor Freight. But anyway, so we go and we order this and we get our whatever the heck it is assembly and it shows up and they're lighter.
Exactly.
And then you get a little bit of equipment instead of being this 3-4 month build of the weather and we kind of almost maybe and we didn't finish, to now the cabin site of we went up there one weekend, took a week off and whatever, and I got a house.
That's exactly right. And you don't have to bring in power or anything of that nature, tools, you just drive it to the site, drop it down.
You're so not allowed, man. I see your disruptive technology of damn it. You know, it's like 3D printing houses stuff.
Can't be doing that, right?
I can't be doing that. Not without a government slip. Hey, Derek, this was awesome, you know, getting us up to speed on this. Go ahead and give out the website of your company.
Yeah, it's brothersandbricks.com. That the server on that isn't working. I sent Donna a link, but it's there's an alias of it, and basically a copy. It's just under a different name. We'll get the website up and running.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
You can post that on there.
Yeah, Donna's got it in the archive. Brickandbrothers.com. It's
Brothers and Brick.
Brothers and Brick. Brothers and A-N-D?
A-N-D-B-R.
Okay. Yep. All right. Yep. Brothers and Brick.com. Is it Bricks plural or just single?
Plural.
Brothers and Bricks.com. Okay. Brothers and Bricks. Brothers and Bricks. Brothers and Bricks. And it comes up. I tell you, you got a taste of it at the beginning. You see it actually starting to be done. Where is the problem? Is it the material or government?
Hi, I'm Derek.
There you go. Hey, thanks, man. What we'll go ahead and do is, Donna, well, after we get done editing the show and get it all done and everything.
I don't know. We're not still in the air, are we?
Well, it's being recorded, but it's not broadcast.
It's the other website is Masonry Contractor in West Bloomfield, MI.com, but I'll get the...
Send her an email with all of that so she can put it in the archive. So when the people go there.
I sent her that.
All right, well, then you're good. What we'll go ahead and do is we'll send, I got to get to my next guest, but what we'll go ahead and do is when we get the file all done, it'll be, 2-3 hours from now, and she will send you the link to it and everything, and you guys can pimp it and promote it and do it and pace.
Awesome. And sounds.
All right, did the brothers, they know you were doing this?
Oh, yeah.
So are they listening?
They're listening somewhere on their phone right now.
All right, very cool. Well, I'm glad we got to do this. It was a good time, and I really appreciate a view into the future here. Can you guys, they got something else they want to do, or they got a new innovation, or having problems with the man, or whatever. We got activists all over the country, and we can just make a big woo-hoo out of something. You know, let me know.
Sorry, I got my phone just blew up with crazy. I was looking, I just got five text messages. I'm sorry, can you repeat what you just said?
When you guys got something, some innovation, some new thing, some you need help, a man's keeping you down, something, you need our help and activists around the country, we can make a big woohoo out of this, or the manufacturer of the block. Well, yeah, I'm all over it. Let's do it.
Oh, man. Appreciate that so much.
Yeah, you go, Donna. In the on the third hour or second hour that we have him, put in there a link to the housing category and to just do the housing. That'd be good enough to get. You put this in housing too, right? Okay, go ahead and make sure this gets added another category in housing, and then send them that link, and they can see how much stuff that we're keeping track of, and. You don't have to include all those. I mean, I would do 3D printing, or I would do in material and all this other stuff. But usually housing, we kind of track this kind of stuff, and you can go there and you can see that we track it. So keep in touch with us.
Yeah, that absolutely. I'd appreciate you inviting me on.
No, it was awesome. We got to do it. We had a good time. It was great to meet you, Derek.
I got a lot more. I don't know. I guess the nerves calmed down that last segment. I was able to. Talk a little more freely.
No, you did great. This is good. It's always, fresh to have a guy doing it and kind of, just chill. Hey, I appreciate that. I got to get going, man. It was great talking to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, definitely, I'll keep in touch.
No. You come up with something cool. I'm all about the cool, man. Give me the cool.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
All right. You too. Have a good one.
Offensive with the Islamic State urging them to stay put, the Islamic State fighters putting explosives on the road into town trying to keep invaders out, and Iraqi forces shelling the same roads to keep the Islamic State from coming out to meet them. Even if they could get out, their options are limited. Fleeing deeper into Anbar just means they're going to be a target of the offensive a little later, and the Iraqi government has viewed Sunni Arab refugees with distrust as possible the Islamic State infiltrators. Past offensives into Fallujah include including the U.S. offensives during last decade's occupation, have been bloody indeed. The Shiite militias spearheading the current offensives have a long history of violent recriminations against the civilian population after their offensives as well, leaving the civilians to wait and worry. FPP Radio News is brought to you by Coinbase. Coinbase is a simple and secure online Bitcoin wallet for sending, receiving, and storing Bitcoin. Get started at coinbase.fppradio.com. UPI reports the Board of Supervisors for Maricopa County, Arizona, on Wednesday voted to settle part of a lawsuit against controversial Sheriff Joe Arpaio that accused his office of using discriminatory practices such as targeting Hispanics. The settlement will include renewed training of deputies and policy changes, but no monetary damages. The trial was scheduled to begin next month, but now the sheriff will face just one charge during the proceedings instead of four. Supervisor Steve Gallardo said of the settlement, "The sheriff's office put us in a situation we should have never been in." The agreement also mandates the sheriff's office to establish an official policy prohibiting retaliation against any individual for any individual's lawful expression of ideas in the exercise of the First Amendment right to freedom of speech. Arpaio, Maricopa County Sheriff since 1993, is well known across the Southwest for taking some critical views as a hardline anti-immigration position. In the past, Arpaio had been accused of abusing power, misuse of public funds, failure to investigate sex crimes, unlawful enforcement of immigration laws, and election law violations. Wednesday's agreement settles three of the four Justice Department charges against the Arizona Sheriff. The allegations that Arpaio retaliated against public officials, punished jail inmates for speaking Spanish, and conducted workplace raids that targeted Latinos. The fourth allegation, that Arpaio's office targets Latino motorists, will be the subject of a trial on August 10th. Gallardo said, "People want their day in court. Most of these issues in the settlement are already moot. People have been pulled over, profiled, and they want to talk about these cases." For over 35 years, Robertson Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Robertson Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co. Reuters reports Europe moved to reopen funding to Greece's stricken economy on Thursday after the parliament in Athens approved a new bailout program in a vote that left the government without a majority. The European Central Bank increased emergency funding for Greek lenders, although capital controls will have to remain in place to avoid a run on the banks when they reopen on Monday. European Union finance ministers also approved 7 billion euros in bridge loans to Greece, allowing it to make a bond payment to the European Central Bank next month. Monday and clear its arrears with the International Monetary Fund. The loans will be finalized on Friday, provided Germany's parliament approves a request to open talks on a three-year bailout program, Greece's third in the past 5 years, worth up to 86 billion euros. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
According to locals waiting for a 66 bus in downtown Chicago last night, a young couple was making out in the passenger shelter like they were in Paris or something. Onlookers spoke to reporters about the pair, who carried on their passionate embrace for over 20 minutes, as if they were in some sort of goddamn candlelit bistro tucked away in Montmartre.
It's been almost a half an hour and they're still going at it. It's like they think they're sitting on a sun-dappled picnic blanket in the Tuileries Gardens. I mean, where the hell are we? The Champs-Élysées?
The Paris Marathon makeout session, which took place in downtown Chicago and not, as frustrated onlookers emphasized, on a cobblestone street in the city of lights, featured intense gazing, deep tongue kissing, and other gestures of affection typically reserved for a couple strolling down the banks of the Seine River.
You know, for a second there, I honestly thought we had all been transported to Parc Monceau, drinking flutes of champagne on a wonderful summer afternoon while being serenaded by a Parisian accordion player. But no, we're at a bus stop in f***ing Chicago.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nass, Freedoms Phoenix, Mikael Klarnissen, he is here in studio straight from Denmark. Okay. Now, I came across him, phone tagging, talking back and forth and so on there, and the book. Okay. We're going to talk about the book. Let's talk about the book. Here, Mikael Klarnissen, a former socialist, now an individualist minarchist. Minarchist, socialist, aren't they the same thing? I don't know. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. Born and raised in Denmark, supposedly the happiest nation on earth, devoted to immobilized collectivism through social psychology and behavioral science. Well, that sounds ominous. To prove that collectivism is driven by depraved mental health, narcissism, yeah, he's writing this book, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt. Collectivism Exposed is the utmost controversial expose and carefully detailed description of the awful emotional mind game that facilitates communism, socialism, fascism, and social liberalism known as collectivism. Collective. All right. The book exposes Denmark, the supposed happiest nation on earth, for what it truly is. Collectivism's biggest propaganda hoax. Danish author Mikael Klarnissen tells the hidden facts and realities of life in Denmark's democratic socialism that they never want you to know. Well, damn. I know why. Okay, a couple of things pop out. One, Denmark seeing it the happiest. Well, are they happy slaves? Are they happy? Are they got everything taken care of? The only people aren't happy is somebody that wants to, own something or be an individual or not a collectivist. And they say, you know what? Don't let the door hit you in the butt. You should go to America. And then you find out it's socialist. So, yeah, good. All right. So, Mikael, help me out here. Who are you and why do I give a crap, what you say about this? And you seem kind of young. How old are you?
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me on the show. I am going 41 in September.
Oh, hell, you look like maybe, 32 or something. So I'm like, okay, Denmark must have health food. All right, so here you're 41. You've been around enough. You've been at least through one or two revolutions of the cycle of we rule you kind of thing. And you're going, all right, I am you brought up in Denmark, that makes you a socialist, at birth or something. So then at some point in your life, you went, nah, there's something pissed you off, man. What was it?
Well, it's not quite that easy. It's a long process. I kind of left the country at the age of 19, and I started traveling around the world. And all in all, it was a slow process. You start doing observations of cultures around the world. And, fact is, there's nothing but socialism in my country. They might name themselves social liberals, but they're, in fact, just socialist liberals. But, more liberated socialists or whatever you could say. But in the end, I started traveling around and I kind of realized that there were certain things that I was, fleeing. I just didn't know them at that point. It started close to 15 years ago when I met my ex-wife. I started, looking at certain trades she had and things that had happened to her in the past. And I started researching stuff and I came across, some information, known as narcissistic personality disorder. And I was like, wow, this is it, you know? And I kind of fell in love with understanding and research.
Personality disorder applied to whom? I mean, to the government?
No, to my ex.
Oh, okay. So you're going, there's something wrong, and I found her picture in the dictionary.
But not only her, also myself. So, I mean, you know, when I actually claimed I was a former socialist, I would also claim that I was a former narcissist. So, even though I was not driven by excessive levels, which are usually that you can't take any critique, that's the character trait, of the extreme levels of narcissism. But I didn't really have that. And through traveling around the world and working all over, you know, I started waking up, but especially, what happened was that I felt there was a uniqueness to American culture, which I eventually, through a lot of research, identified as what we refer to as individualism. So through an understanding of narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder and higher levels known as psychopathic narcissism, I kind of, you know, woke up over that there were certain traits that I even found in Australia that was quite similar to the way that people behaved in my own part of the world. And I was kind of told, and as I explained in the book, I was told that these character traits of my own country, or generally Scandinavia, that they were uniquely Scandinavian. And I was like, no, this is not really something uniquely Scandinavian. It is uniquely collectivist behavior. And, I researched, as I try to explain, I began in myself. So I studied psychopathology.
Let's get to people know what we're talking about here before we get to the break. Narcissism. An excessive or erotic interest in oneself and one's physical appearance. It's all about extreme selfishness with the grandiose view of one's own talents and craving for admiration is characterized as a personality type. Self-centeredness arising from a failure to distinguish the self from external objects, either in very young babies as a feature of mental disorder, blah, 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 blah. So what, basically, narcissism is me, 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 me. It's all about me. The world's around me, and it's for me, which is, I don't know.
Well, often the problem with this sort of thing is that it's misinterpreted for egoism. And actually, the characteristic of egoism has is a positive thing compared to this stuff, because what you just described is known best as self-love. Okay, and it's an outgoing thing where you are in search of narcissistic supply. That means I need confirmation or affirmation from outside sources. I don't have enough in my own esteem. I need it from outside sources. So it's an outgoing. And if you want to know a perfect example of it, all you have to do is look at your president, at your current president. So, you know, Obama is already diagnosed, by several, psychopathologists and around the world, among others. A great guy I love dearly, known as Sam Vaknin. You guys should check him out. He's done a pretty good assessment on Obama's character traits.
Well, that's like all politicians.
Well, generally,
it's like a minimum job requirement. You know, you get to be president of the United States, got to be a narcissist. Okay, so this is, we're kind of getting, so narcissism in the extreme cases that you were starting to discover in yourself and others that kind of sent you on this path was, is it a personality trait that was you were born with, or is it the byproduct of the socialism that was going on in Denmark?
It's a byproduct of society, absolutely, yes.
You think so?
And the father left, you get, and that's already, you know, this is one of the queries that, you know, when people debate politics, because they want to put the fascist on the right wing, which is a lie, you know what I mean? So, you know, but as soon as you start moving into greater government, totalitarian cyber society, you will have more and more collective narcissism, so.
Okay, so this is what he recognized, going around, and we'll get some more history of him, you know, and his discovery, but he's going, you know what? I'm starting to see that fascism, this ism, that ism, socialism, communism, this, all the isms are in one from the same place, and then the rest of us over here just not wanting to get ismed.
Uncovering the secrets
and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to be. Your beast of burden! You know, this is, you know, the, oh, you're going to need to be, you got to pay taxes, you know? So I'm just going, you know, on a personal quest, you know, kind of discover, you know, some kind of recognized pathology in his relationship, his significant other, himself, and so on. And he's going, wait. This kind of applies to the whole freaking my country I was growing up made this way. What the hell is that? You know, so I'm wondering, you know, real quick, the motivation for you to do this research, I can see that. And then you started to see there was something inherently wrong and you wanted to discover it, fix it, write it down. And you had just enough narcissism to think somebody else might want to read it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, there's a big difference between positive narcissism and negative narcissism. So, I mean, basically what people have to understand is I slowly woke up, I felt deceived. I felt deceived by my country for the lies that they're trying to promote. And, this whole collective way of thinking that is, you know, generated by denigrating each other and the character traits are they're harsh to describe, but when you go through it all and when you look at the behavior of the leftist, everything is like, oh, you're an idiot. It's never argumentative, you know. It's not like you're up against someone who is rational in their thought and so forth. But, I mean,
it's good to argue with them for the benefit of the audience, though. I mean, a lot of times they're supporters. I mean, you're nice and let them be jerks. But I've been through this. When it started the internet in the early, mid-90s, I mean, it was libertarians dominated. And any and everybody that came on, ooh, we want to explain it to you. And what happened is you never really changed them. A lot of times they're just trolls or they're paid or they're, you know, in with the system or whatever. But they're definitely want to argue. They got an argument and they're telling their bosses they're arguing. But the thing is that you're able to just calmly walk them through their own problems. And it's there forever as a thread on email. It's kind of, and they don't like that. So I'm going, as you're arguing with these people, how many people do you really change their mind? Or oftentimes it's all the lurkers and people that are watching the argument that you have more influence on. They're just the ability for you to make the argument.
Well, I think the most important thing getting to the point of why I actually started writing this stuff was it's so important that if you just take an example of someone who suffers from borderline personality disorder, I couldn't point a finger at anyone in the world and say those character traits you might have. That's not how it is. But with narcissism, it is something that is a part of us in our childhood, and we kind of outgrow it, and create a positive, normal ego. But those who suffer from narcissistic personality disorder are still stuck in an ego that is the equivalent of a six-year-old child. And the importance of understanding this disorder is that it is a disorder of ambient abuse. In other words, psychological violence or psychological terrorism. And because this goes on, it is something that is basically spreading like a fungus all over the world. Just to give you some figures, the percentage in America is supposedly 0.5 to 1% of the population in America. I propose in my country that it's at least two-thirds. Okay, that is in Denmark, and it, you know, it is
based on what? Based on policies or voting, or I mean, what are you talking about? What's the criteria you're using to say? And this is a pathology generated by the system, by politics?
No, it is behaviors that you can observe. It took me 6 years to do research, and I've done 15 years of research, but it took me 6 years of pro research in Denmark of the people. I went through the school systems and did observations daily, it took me 6 years to write the whole book. So no, it's not like that. Well, the way that you usually diagnose someone with narcissistic personality disorder is that you have at least five continuous traits or tendencies that are continuous and are strong and hard to control.
Well, if you have such a high percentage in one country or one area or one border, a demographic that you're using, I'm like, why? I mean, why is it so high in Denmark? But they're the happiest. They're the happiest narcissists on the planet.
There is a huge difference between being happy about owning a phone and then being happy genuinely because you are happy with whatever you have. I mean, these people don't have an opinion. I'm usually very rude to them. I'm like, hey, if you come here and you want to tell me your opinion, and I'm always open to people's opinion. The problem is just you don't have an opinion. You have the opinion of society, okay? You don't. People don't. There is no individualism.
So they're just regurgitating what was printed on the 3x5 card.
They're just like mimicking each other. You know, you can. You know, you've spoken to three Danish people, and you've spoken to all.
That bad, huh?
Oh, it is that bad.
Okay, based on what? Based on a system, based on propaganda, based on the school system, based on its cold? I mean, what?
Based on Marxism, based on the fact, and, you know, I'd actually like to get to the point that you mentioned just a minute ago, that you know, in the past when you started this program, everyone was more or less libertarian. But one has, and this is exactly why I needed my work to get out there, because it's important to understand that it is an emotional process that is taking over this country too in America. It is not just; it's a slow legislative process that is, you know, coming from the left, taking over the country through denigration, It's a big impact, or the impact is created kind of through the school system, through the youth, and so forth. Like, you know, for a fact, how many people do you meet that are libertarian, that are, you know, school teachers and so forth? You know, it starts at the education system, and it's a process that is slow, and it's definitely influenced by the you know, my country, you know, being promoted like it's the happiest on earth, even though I could prove beyond any doubt that it's
wrong. Well,
where
does that come from? Why did they say that? And how do they get? Because it's the most socialist. So they go, look, it's the happiest because it's the most socialist without actually saying it. I mean, what are they? What's the reason for this propaganda?
Well, I mean, in the end, you could go over to some conspiracy policies and try to explain that. Well, first of all, statistically, Denmark has the highest household debt to banks, you know, in the Western world, and that is because the average levies in my country, or what the government takes, you know, back in tax, is around 80%, and that is not even if you're rich. So, you know,
then you ought to be happy. Government's taking care of you.
People are not happy. There's no individuality. There's no right to be yourself.
Was there a desire by the youth to do that? Is this a generational thing that's changing?
But they don't have an option of thinking otherwise. It's
called the internet, man.
I know.
It's called the Levolution. It went all over the place. They're going, damn it! There's pockets of, you know, we got to shut down, you know, the internet. I mean, you know, people are being able to find this outlet. I mean, the same thing that you did. I guarantee a lot of the research and the things and you read and did and kind of, you know, expanded your mind might have been on the internet.
Well, fact is, had I never traveled, I wouldn't have been any different. That's exactly how it is. I mean, it's an organism. Marxism is an organism, and it is spreading through the world, and it's spreading.
So that's your goal. Marxism is bad, isms is bad, and you're going to talk about more than bad when we come back with Mikhail Claire Neeson, Manipulism, the book.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime, 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
The weapon of guilt. I guess they're using guilt as it. Let's go ahead and I'll just read a little bit in the introduction here. I think just a couple of paragraphs here, the introduction and right off of chapter one. Because in the break, he was saying, he goes, I go, did you write this in any other language? No, English. Why? Because Denmark men are so screwed up they can't get past the first paragraph. You know, the first chapter, certainly. All right, introduction. The most elusive notion known to the modern age is the altruistic egalitarian ideals of the left wing, known as Marxism, are perceived as ideologies. Social liberalism, which is the first step towards socialism with the intent to achieve communism, merely defies the severity of inferiority complex, the extremely tiny gap between pathological narcissism and its more extreme form known as narcissistic personality disorder. Growing up in a collective society, one is coerced and virtually left with all but one choice. As a former socialist, finally liberated, who is born and raised in Denmark, supposedly the happiest nation on earth, I have devoted my life to altering the world about the subliminal... of alerting the world about the subliminal secrets of collectivism. How can anyone truly fight anything if one is not 100% aware and able to describe exactly what one is fighting? Now, the introduction goes on, but I go to chapter one here. This is where this happiest thing on the planet came from. Here we go. And, of course, it was Oprah Winfrey. Okay, here we go. For several years, I have felt obligated to tell my side of this story, especially since the climate convention... COP15 in Copenhagen on December 2009, where Oprah Winfrey visited Denmark and later proclaimed that Danes were the happiest people in the world. She was supported by data from Dr. Adrian White, PhD in sociology from the British University of Leicester. Ironically, for over five decades in the era 1950 to 2006, Denmark's suicide rate has averaged just about double that of the United States. Also, Denmark has a much higher rate of alcohol consumption. Moreover, in the same five decades, Denmark's suicide rate has averaged almost triple that of the United Kingdom, countries with the exact same climates. Okay, so it goes on. So that's where this, you know, they're the happiest people on earth because Oprah Winfrey said. Okay, so, you know, there's scientific data for you. All right. So I'm going, your goal in that thing that kind of sums it up is that you're seeing a pathology that is the result of this kind of a philosophy that a country is operating under. And as you traveled, you go, whoa. There are people that are just totally different in the way they think. And I remember seeing a documentary recently about an eye doctor that would go and do thousands of operations in North Korea. And you see the people in North Korea and how they act and what they're saying to them. I'm going, man, these people have been messed up from birth. So you want to see it, you can have a stark difference. Maybe go to Denmark, you won't see it as starkly as you would maybe North Korea, but there's different levels of it, and certainly they want to take and use the European Union to make everybody a slave. To what? To whom? What is behind all this?
Well, it's basically perfect control. It's a perfect control.
Yeah, system. Perfect control by whom for what?
Well, higher authorities. It could be even higher than government. You know, I don't, honestly, I mean, as I mentioned before, it seems that my country is being promoted for the purpose of promoting bank slavery because, you know, they make people believe that taxes are a great thing and having people, you know, enjoying paying, you know, an average of at least 80% in tax as a middle-class citizen. You know, it makes people, you know, completely dependent on basically, you know, borrowing money in the bank. But referring to what
let's talk about that. You know, the debt ratio, this, you know, how much people are is it worse than America? Or, I mean, If the government's paying for everything, why are they got bank debt?
Well, the bank debt in my country is almost triple that of the average American, you know. It is
as a citizen, I'm owed more in debt triple U.S.
As a Danish citizen owes, in average, triple that of an American, yes.
Well, maybe that's why they're happy. They're slaves. Okay.
Stupidly happy. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is, it's unique. It comes from someone that, you know, you weren't libertarian, you know, liberal what? I mean, you never heard of individual kind of, what was your first experience traveling outside of Denmark that you go, damn, there's something different. Where was this at?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the best, arguments that I can use is the fact that you I came to America and I was like, whoa, these people open. They're like, oh, they're talking to me. What's up with this? You know, I mean, you know, I came here and I just fell in love with this openness, you know, like people were social. They were actually social, you know, out there on the street. You'd meet people, like you'd go to the bus stop in the morning and you'd greet someone, like, you know, good morning, and they'd greet you back, and you'd end up in a quiet conversation.
Well, what happens in Denmark? They punch you?
No, they don't. You know, people act like hermits, you know.
But they're not punching you in the face.
No, but they punch you emotionally, rather.
Okay, you know, so it's like going to New York. You ask somebody what time it is, and they just keep walking.
Probably, yeah, but yeah. I mean, you probably even get an attitude in Denmark.
Okay. Well, so you come to America, and you want to stay? I mean, you're done traveling? Are you going to go somewhere else? What are you doing?
Well, I'm actually seeking asylum in America now. Yeah,
asylum?
I am seeking
political
asylum. Yes, I am in pretty great trouble because of this book. So
have you started the process for asylum yet?
I'm going to do that shortly. Yeah.
Okay. Now you're in trouble because of the book. Why? From whom?
Well, I mean, you know, I am up against the government that will go to any extreme. It's a really long story, but I mean, you know, the government will do anything, and you know, eventually, just like some of the people that have tried to expose Obama, you will be deemed crazy. They will try to put you into mental institutions or whatever. I mean, I fear for my safety. I really do.
The banking system, the government, the international, we don't like you talking about, and we're happy. I mean, you know what?
Generally, the government is,
In what way? I mean, how do they manifest that? Do they get extra anal probe at the airport or something? I mean,
well,
what's up?
I mean, you could say, upside, you know, the whole system is upside down. In America, you're not guilty. In Denmark, you are guilty until proven innocent. So if the government says anything, they'll put you in jail if it fits them. They don't need proof.
Well, don't think you're jumping out of the frying pan into the fire here.
I know. America is in a...
Yeah, the culture is different. The people haven't gone that far yet. I mean, there's still, you know, the battle going on. But I don't think the government's not any better than yours. I mean, you know, maybe the people, they might be more that'll hide you in their basement or something. But, I mean, you know, the guys with the uniforms are still banging on doors.
No, I absolutely agree that the government in America is messed up. I absolutely agree. The only difference is that the people are not that screwed up.
So, they're trying.
Oh, yeah, they're trying. But
you
know, that's why
in Denmark, let me ask you this. Here in certainly each state is different, but Arizona... We have really good homeschool abilities. You know, you don't, you just homeschool. Yeah. And all we did is we filled out, you know, the back of a little message pad. I went to school one beginning of year. My oldest was like third grade. And I go, to whom it may concern, Hancock children aren't going to government schools anymore. Paste and signed it and done. Because the law was you just notify. Well, there, I notified you. You know, and then we never went back.
Well, you know, it actually, homeschooling is illegal in Sweden, the country right next to Denmark. So, you know, the government, it will eventually take over.
But what about Denmark? Can you do homeschooling?
You can do homeschooling still, yeah, but they probably remove it if they you know,
but they get away with
if
it.
If they could get away with
so
it.
So in Sweden, you're mandated, you got to go government school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of people actually, you know, they move to Denmark or other countries and so forth. I also overheard that you are not allowed to criticize immigration in Sweden. I mean, I could come up with a lot of foolish laws in my own country, too. After
you know, this is... when we come back, we'll get more into this. But I can tell you, you can see, you know, he's driven to share this story and we need to hear more of it.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Same kind of the same quest and battle of them we kind of done 25 years ago and did it, and I get it, okay? You know, but I Mikhail Claire Neeson has, you know, man, he written the book, Manipulism, and what he's trying to, the bottom line is I'm getting the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, is you want to expose just how psychotic governments are, certainly, when they're advocating and beating down the individual in support of a collectivist, we rule you. Okay. Now the problem is that, you know, that they're having is one thing that I notice. What gives me optimism is taking trillions, tens of trillions around the world. I mean, trillions just in America, but trillions of dollars and a generation or two or three generations to try and force this down our throat, and they're still coming up against, you know, resistance from guys like Mikhail.
Well, the fact is actually that when you mentioned this, and you know, the everything starts in the education system and so forth.
Propaganda, government, oh, yeah. PSA, public service announce of you got to have this in your sitcom to do the kind of whatever. I mean, it's just, it's everywhere. It's propaganda. Now, the Pentagon, you know, wants to have the ability to do more propaganda on U.S. citizens, damn it, because you say we can't, which we do anyway, but we need it legalized because, damn it, we need to get your thinking right.
Well, the fact is that America is about three generations away from looking more or less like my own, you know, home country. So, you know,
yay, we got that long.
Well, it's an emotional process that basically creeps the nation, you know, and it needs to stop. People need to understand what it is, really. You know, you mentioned psychosis, and actually what happens is something, a phenomenon within psychology known as the folie à deux, which is known as a shared psychosis. And basically what I mentioned earlier, you know, it's like people start mimicking each other. And, you know, people can't have, an opinion that you know,
deviates from the official. You got the lab coat,
yeah,
says.
You follow the
4 out of 5 doctors say.
You follow the sheep. It's like herding, you know? It's sheep herding, seriously. It's just a human, you know, way of doing it.
You know, and they're taking advantage. It's like a science that they're getting into how they manipulate. I mean, it's been over decades. There's a lot. Oh, yeah. I got to have you read Authoritarian Sociopathy. I'm really pimping that. A friend of mine wrote this article. Did you see it?
No.
I got to get you. You'll go. You'll all. Because there's been a lot of experimentation.
In absolutely. Fact, Behaviorism.
Yeah, it's a science. You know, what's the science? How do we rule millions and millions of people, hundreds of millions, billions of people to do what we want to benefit us? How much is that worth investing in? Let me think. A lot. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then the benefit is a lot.
Complete control.
And yeah, but what's the benefit to the individual? Don't care. Not on our agenda. Okay. So it takes us as individuals to be able to do what you're doing and try and, you know, share this with people. But I mean, you just did the book. I mean, it just came out. You probably, you know, finished, you know, kind of the manuscript and getting kind of, you know, maybe a year or two ago, and you got free online the ebook and the Audible. You know, you're just like, yeah, man, we're just take it free. The only reason you printed the book was because, hey, somebody wanted to have a book, right?
Well, there was a demand for the paperback, yes. I give away my ebook and my audiobook for free. I'm, you know, I look at this as a wall, except I have a war with words, except, you know, I don't use coercion. I use truth, you know? So
how do you fund yourself? I mean, you're not selling. How do you monetize it? You got, you know, you bought a bunch of Bitcoin when it was 30 cents or something? I mean, what are you doing?
I don't fund myself. I barely make anything out of this. This is out of my pocket. I'm about 11 grand out of my pocket on this project. I don't care. This is about exposing. This is about exposing evil.
I'm hip. What do you do for a living?
Right now, I have a little bit of money saved up, and I'm kind of surviving, you know, best I can, but, you know.
Seeking political asylum in the United States. You know, that would be a good case. You know, that would be news right there. He's seeking political asylum from Denmark, the happiest place on earth. That would be a story right there. You need, when you do this and file, let us know. We'll make a thing out of it.
Well,
that'd
I should have done this long ago. The problem I had was I was actually more or less willing to you know, live in this fear and live in this country. But I have two little children that I've actually left, and I realized slowly that you know, I've got my daughter 8 and I got a daughter 10, and I realized, you know what, I am not letting my children grow up in a world like this. I'm not. I can't fight Denmark from within. I could only, best bet would be to fight, you know, Denmark from outside, and especially people that listen and care for freedom. Because in if you ask a Dane what freedom is, they'll say, oh, it's driving down the highway and feeling the wind in the hair in your new Mercedes. Except the Mercedes is owned by the bank, right? I mean, so that, you know, and freedom to me is the fact that I own my body. That I have the right to say no, and that I don't have to participate in some kind of hippie collective, you know, on a national level.
Okay, now let me ask you this. If you had one trait or message that you could get embraced by Generation Next in Denmark, what would it be? You need to know what?
Well, you need to understand narcissism in order to fight what's going on, because they're not taking over America in the sense that they've done in China and Russia, which is the fascist military kind of takeover. I don't believe that's the approach. I believe the approach is a Fabian socialist approach, also known as democratic socialism. It's a legislative approach where it's a slow process where they start stealing from one person through taxes and basically bribing someone else and purchasing votes in that way. You know, it's not that there isn't bribery in all parts of even the Republican Party or whatever, but you know, I see bribery everywhere, but the way that you know, this new system is functioning is that they're using, you know, the Robin Hood kind of way where they steal from one and give it to another to purchase that vote, and a government as an, you know, middleman basically empowers itself that way. And eventually, like in my country, my government is actually bigger than the Chinese government. Okay, I mean, it's 66% of all employment in my country is through the government.
How is that sustainable?
It's not sustainable. Eventually it will crash. And the only reason why Denmark has survived this, I mean, if American had done some sort of thing like the equivalent of what they've done to Cuba, Denmark would never have been Denmark the way that it is now. It would look more or less like East Europe. Also, you probably know the big shipping company known as Maersk Sealand, and you know, they are more or less the reason that there is, you know, any money flowing in. I mean, because money just in this country, just, you know, they're going around in circles. There is no,
you know,
it's
this
stagnized.
Is not a surprise. If you look at the history of Denmark and the Netherlands and so on, they were one of the largest explorers. They were up there with the British Empire and, you know, France and Portugal and so on. Denmark, matter of fact, that they God, until recently, you know, the biggest holder of the United States debt until maybe just, hell, still,
yeah,
for all I
recently,
know,
yeah,
was Denmark. You know, it was the Netherlands. They owned an enormous amount of our debt, or they funded a lot of stuff. And then, you know, here came the rise of Japan and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, so Denmark really has they, them, those, the powerful, the banking kind of man. They were centered in Denmark. I mean, you know, they kind of started a lot of this stuff there. So it doesn't surprise me that this collectivist, we control everybody attitude, you know, is so prevalent there, because that's where a lot of it started.
Well, I mean, when you look at the process of the socialist influence in my country, of course, it's a long, 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 long process. It's taken like 150 years. But, you know, it kind of took over slowly through the 50s, 60s, you know, with the hippie culture and so forth. And, you know, it's an emotional process, and it actually, when it starts taking over for real, it goes quite quick, you know, and it's completely destroyed, you know, people's ability to think, you know, rationally anymore. I mean, you have these people that go to school for 25 years, and they call themselves educated, yet they tell you that they believe in free stuff, and that this education is free, even though they pay 80% in tax. I mean, come on, what is ignorance? You know what I mean?
All right. We're going to continue this conversation. Go to the archive. We're not done yet. But, you know, we got a hint. You know, what do we learn? Something's rotten in Denmark. You didn't think I was going to get that in
always
there.
Okay, was. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and continue the conversation, because I can see that this is going to be a lifelong thing for Mikhail here, and I want to make sure that if he's going to seek asylum, you know, in the United States, that we at least know about it, because, I mean, damn, if that isn't a story, the happiest place on earth, they want to seek asylum in America because it's not as bad. We're going to find out here when we do the archive extension bonus. Talk to you tomorrow. Okay. What we'll go ahead and do is I want to go ahead, and we're not going to have commercial interruption now, and we can just go ahead and talk. I am interested in the political process that you would go through to seek asylum. That is going to be interesting, because they're initially going to go, no.
I'm not going to get it, but I'm at least going to.
Yeah. No, I don't give a crap what they say. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's doing the black robe. Well, they're never going to. I don't care. I just want them to say it. You know, that this is not. That's ideal. We're trying to be Denmark. That's my point. Okay. So as you go through and you map out what the problems are and why you want the freedom left and they're oppressing of the freedom, and I come here to be able to think and be an individual and yada, 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 that is going to be interesting to see what they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they if they're smart enough, they'll just shut up and just not say anything and deny. But they'll see it as an opportunity, because they'll look at it and go, look, an opportunity for us to squash like a bug this guy, whatever. So you need the alternative media out here and the...
They're going to squash me for sure.
There's a lot of people out here that would understand and use a lot of your rhetoric and information and kind of let's see what he's talking about. So this very effort of political asylum from Denmark, heck, man. You know, you might make money off your book.
Well, I mean, the fact is, as a marketing, you know, as I've done marketing most of my life, you know, any form of publicity.
Okay,
is no, publicity,
this is what I want to do.
So.
If you will do, what is the first process by which you would seek asylum? Have you researched it yet?
I would have to seek a lawyer first. I have to speak to a lawyer. I have to speak to the people. I have to also present a case. I was actually put in jail for 60 days for something I never did. So that has to do with it. But I kind of chose after that. You know, when it happened, I got completely screwed over by the government. I stood up against a government official, and I never heard him, nothing. They had no proof. They had no whatsoever, no witnesses, no whatever. But I was actually...
Well, that might be to your advantage.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's not like they go, well, wow, you didn't ever have any problem. No, I did have a problem. Oh, okay, damn it. He had a problem with the government. All right. So this is, you know, and the audience knows, who am I thinking of? Mr. Mark J. Victor, you know, the criminal defense attorney here that's wanting to hear the story of I want political asylum. Donna, call Mark right now. See if he's in, if he'll come on real quick. Ernie's doing an extended bonus interview, and I just want to talk to him for just a minute. See if he's available. If he, this will be awesome. This will be awesome. Because this is so freaking right up his alley. Do you got $100?
If I have $100?
You have $100?
Oh,
Yeah, you have to scrape it?
I would have to.
Okay. We'll see if we can get you a meeting with Mark. Everybody wants to say, I want to talk to him. He's like, yeah, $100. I'm tired of giving you $100.
And so I go, he just goes $100
every time.
Man. Oh, that's
come
a cool
on.
One.
So we'll see if we can kind of entice him into this. Because this is the kind of thing that we're doing to have a battle that you're guaranteed to, well, you may not guaranteed, but likelihood that you'll lose in what they say, but you're guaranteed that you're going to win in the argument. Plus, you got a book, manipulism. And after he reads it, maybe he'll go, it's,
well, if people read my book, they'd understand why I need to do this. Okay, because, there are people in my country that have disappeared over exposing similar stories.
Yeah.
So,
If you're going to call him on your cell phone, if you call his cell phone, because he's not going to answer just some other phone. If it comes from you, he definitely answers the Donna. And then, if not, you can just go through his office, if you're going to do it through the system. But so we'll try and get him on. Either way, I'll try and hook you up with an attorney that would, do this for, I don't know, maybe we'll do a fundraiser or, save you from the socialist, whatever. We'll see, but he might, give you at least a little bit of advice and start the process and somebody look at something. Because this is definitely just perfect of interest of, freeing from the...
I should have done it before this. I just couldn't leave my children, okay? I have actually left my children behind, and it hurts. I don't even want to talk about it. I can't.
Yeah, no, I'm
going to break down. It's just,
Well, you're trying to save them.
I cannot save them from within, because I can't change my culture from within, but I can when people from the outside are laughing.
Yeah, get on the mic. You're too far away.
Oh, when the people are laughing, eventually, and I don't even need people to laugh at them. I just need people to stand at the border when Danish people go through the border to the United States, and they'd be like, oh, you're Danes, okay? And they start with their propaganda from Denmark, and they'd be like, oh, well, don't worry, I read Mikkel's book, At least they can't coerce people anymore. I just need to take that manipulation out of their hands,
Let me tell you, a story, and you understand. I understand what you're talking about. One time, and it's used, what? Oh, he's not in the office? Okay. Well, we'll work it out. He could be on a cruise all the time. He's doing some cruise, But the what we're going to go ahead and do is, I'll tell you this story. I go down to the city of Phoenix, City Hall for whatever. We're always doing something, just doinking them around for something. And they had just built this new Taj Mahal. I mean, it's stainless steel, mahogany, and granite, man. I mean, they spared absolutely no expense on this freaking government building.
Oh, yeah,
that they needed, because
it's not their money, man.
Because they said so. So I go in, and I am just taken aback by the plushness of this this building. And I'm like, wow, this. And they go, oh, yeah, well, it's better than. And they started going into their mantra why they had to have this. And I'm going, save your time. I'm libertarian. Oh, okay. I mean, normally they would. You say that, and they'll go. All right, yeah, you're not buying it, huh?
Yeah,
nope,
yeah,
done,
he's
next.
Not the fooled guy.
Yeah,
he's
so
not the guy
so
who gets
if you it got to the point, and that's kind of what you want to go through with manipulism. Is you going, look, I read, manipulism. Oh, okay, never mind. And they just know where the argument goes. They know they're
exactly.
going to lose. They know that's a waste of time. They know you're going to give the benefit to the audience or anybody around and demonstrate, and kind of they don't want to have the argument because they themselves already know. They're just repeating the BS and giving that they know that they're on the wrong
exactly
side.
But that's exactly the fact. I mean, they know that something is wrong, and I mean, what I'm merely trying to take out of their hands their ability to coerce, and manipulate people around the world. Because I mean, if you really want to understand what hell is, I mean, hell on earth is the country I used to live in.
Why are you saying it's so bad? I mean, what is so bad about Denmark?
No, imagine living in an abusive relationship, but it's just on a national level. I'm serious.
And give me an example. What's the largest city in Denmark?
Copenhagen.
Okay, so we got Copenhagen, and Copenhagen is, a police state-y, they're, checkpoint everywhere, and all your money, and
you even have smite campaigns, stuff like that.
You gotta have what?
They have smite campaigns.
smite campaign?
Like the police goes out and checks you out, and if you don't do what they want, they'll kick your ass, to be honest. They just do it in obscured ways, man.
That's America.
I have had I've been beaten by the police 3 times in the last, since 2008 when I moved there. I used to travel. Almost 14 years have I traveled around the world. Not once have I ever been in trouble with any form of government, ever. Okay? I've lived 6 years in the States prior to this. And I've lived 6 years in Australia, and I've lived 7 summer seasons in Spain, and half a year in Turkey. I've traveled almost 35 years in my entire life.
Well, what is it you do for a living that you're able to travel around?
I just worked, took jobs in Spain. I used to, work with the, bars, and I used to manage, bars and clubs, and I've done anything. I mean, I worked as a mover in America.
You're the IT computer going around the web, taking your job.
I'm just the guy that works. I'm an ordinary guy that
did
goes
some reading,
there and
didn't speaks English.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, is everybody in Denmark?
At least I do now.
Well, in Denmark, a lot of people, we had a young girl, she was 27, 28, did her thesis on out of Finland, mm-hmm. and they gave her a grant, and it was only like $5,000-$10,000 or something, and she wanted to come back this summer and intern, and she found another gig, I guess. Donna, make a contact, send an email to Laura and find out how she's doing, what's up. Just go ahead and, give her a ping. And what she did is she came here to study America's obsession with prepping, doomsday preppers and all this kind of stuff. Because then I started to realize the rest of the world sees America through whatever government mandated program of National Geographic of we love government crap.
But the difference between Americans and in Europeans is that Europeans trust their government like they trust their best friend. There's a huge difference. You don't trust your government. You know for a fact that there something's probably going to happen at some point, so you prep yourself. That's the difference.
She was saying when she came and she did the research here in the Southwest, she went to like 4 or 5 states, and she goes, the only common denominator that I saw is that people saw the preparation as the only vote they really had, the only voice, the only thing that made them feel better. They didn't have representation. They didn't think their vote counted. They didn't think their opinion mattered. So they just go, I'm just going to prep for, what I think is this inevitably is going to happen. And they felt empowered that way. So she goes, that was the only common thread, and that most people had guns.
Well, I would kind of disagree with that assessment, to be honest. I mean, I could see how people could create a form of contentment through this stuff. I could, but it's also the Americans are as libertarians, they have the right to have guns, so they have they care for the
some
right
places.
To protect. Yeah, but they Americans genuinely and most people I meet do understand that they have the right to protect themselves, and prepping is a part of it. I protect my house, I prep myself, so if everything or anything happens, I would definitely or most definitely be prepared. So what's the wrong in that? I really don't see.
Well, what's it like if you're brought up in Denmark? Are you able to defend yourself at your home? Somebody bust in? I mean,
absolutely not. If you were ever to defend yourself, you'd probably end up in jail. Or not probably, you would end up in jail.
Oh, okay. Well, your instances where you had, you get a beat down by the man, what happened? Why? You didn't lick his boot enough or something? I mean, what?
Oh, my God. That's such a long story.
Just skip to the end, man.
I can't. Just to be short, we have something called a TV license. In order to own any form of equipment that can take any form of equipment that can take a digital signal, you have to pay a $500, government fee. Oh, that's, yeah. A $500 government fee. And
What? A year? A day?
Yeah, it's just another tax they have.
And it's every year?
Yeah, every year. And
So wait a minute. I'm spending like $45 or 30, 40 euros a month just to watch TV.
Oh, yeah, but that's nothing to do with it.
That's
cable. That's whatever. No.
This is a government.
This is a government TV license, which is so the government can.
Well, Britain does the same thing.
Well, it's dead wrong. You don't have the right to start imposing, these kind of... I mean, it's the same as if I opened a website and I said, well, you have to pay for it because it's available. I mean, that's what they do, you know, and they've got so many fees and duties in the first place that, you know, they've ripped you completely off.
Okay, what? So you didn't pay your TV tax?
I've never done it, and many, many other people in Denmark don't do it either, but mostly, not because they're rebellious, but mostly because they don't have the cash to do it, okay? But I didn't do it, and someone came to my apartment, and he knocked my door, and I opened, and he said, well, you don't pay, hello, I'm from the blah, 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 and, you know, you don't pay TV license, and I'm like, yeah, no, I don't, and I never will. And I locked the door again. And he started hammering on my door. And he did it for about a minute. And I went back. I was reading bedtime stories for my children at that point. I go back to the door. And the guy, you know, I get angry at that point. So I opened the door, you know, roughly. And, you know, he must have moved away in that instance. And, you know, I look out and then I'm like, dude, you better stop this, okay? And he's like, he turned around. He pointed his finger at me and he said, you better behave, you know. And I blew up, you know. So I intimidated him verbally, never touched him whatsoever. I intimidated him verbally out of my, you know, away from my where I lived. And when he was gone, there was nothing to it. I didn't hear a thing about this for another month until the police calls me up and they're like, hello, we would blah, blah. I'm like, hey, sorry, I don't want to buy that. They called me up again. Don't worry, I'm rude to the police in Denmark, man.
Yeah, I'm not interested.
But the main point is that, at that point, I was being accused of having beaten the guy. There was no witnesses. There was no whatsoever. When I eventually... he had gone to the police the same night, and there was no proof at the police station. He did,
but
not.
He filled out a form, and there's a piece of paper of somebody said something. And where's your videotape? Yeah, that's one thing. You know, like Terry Breslin, we have Checkpoint USA on the show in the first hour, I think, and that is all about. He has five cameras in his vehicle all the time.
Yeah,
he went all the way to the Ninth Circuit, got $250,000 settlement. From them, the checkpoint here. We've been following this since December of 2002.
You could have had 50 cameras in a car in Denmark, and you would never have...
Doesn't matter!
You would have never had that settlement. Never.
Yeah, okay.
No one. Only 2% of cases in my country are won by the plaintiff.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. Okay.
The ones that investigate the police is the police itself. So I mean, it's completely.
Well, how is it that, you know, what's their role in the European Union? Are they a member?
Oh yeah.
And they, you know, are indebted to, and they've got a big giant debt, a sovereign debt, and we do what they say because of debt.
The government does have a debt. I think the average is about $20,000 per capita. So.
Yeah,
but it's sick that a government can borrow money on behalf of someone. You know, it's just it's crazy, and it's just for handouts.
Well,
you know?
we had a campaign when they did the TARP here in 08, 09, whatever. When they did that, it was my first grandchild. We have our seventh coming. Our first grandchild was in my daughter-in-law's womb, so we did big billboards. Okay, that said it's not my debt with a baby in the womb, a fetus, and then another one. They had three babies with barcodes on their butt. Being scanned on grocery scanners, and they're saying, it's not my debt, freedomsphoenix.com. And it was all about my granddaughter. Well, just like a couple months ago, she was there, and we're talking, and I go, oh, yeah, it's all about you, and she was asking different things, and we have different logo in the T-shirt with that on it, you know, for little kids and everything. And she goes, I know where this is, and she ran in and got her baby pictures. And when she was first born in the hospital, we had that logo laid on her chest. It's not my debt. Little girl, I'll show it to you. And she goes, ah, I know what that, now I know what that means. And I'm going, wow, man, this really pays off. And what happened, it became a YouTube viral video where all these kids were going around saying, it's not my debt. It's not my debt. It's not my debt. You know, little 10-second videos. It's not my debt. So this concept of a government spending that she didn't show, what's that mean? And I simple explanation. I what do you tell a five-year-old? Okay. Almost six.
The limits,
and I
right.
go, there are people that are spending money that you have to pay back plus more of what they spent. And they say, you owe it when you get older.
Yeah,
they're
going to exactly
go,
the point.
Where's
you're
your
already
money?
A slave.
You're a tax slave. You're working. Anytime you get a job, you got to pay back money that somebody else spent in your name. And she's like, well,
That's exactly the point with the Social Security card.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Donna's showing you. When she was a baby, that was the sign that
It's not my debt. I love it. Exactly. But it's exactly the thing. When do they start chipping us? They've already started researching it in Sweden, you know? So, I mean, you know,
Hold it up for the camera. This one, I don't like showing the grandkid, but when they're babies, nobody knows what they look like anyway.
But I mean, in my country, you're already born with an identity number, like a tag, like an animal, and you are supposed to be, you know, basically the next slave of society.
Hold it up. You know, okay, go ahead and get it up there. Look at the screen. No, look at the screen on the camera. Okay, we just want to see. All right. Well, that's what I'm seeing. Now what? There you go. It's not my debt, Revolution of the Gerber Baby kind of thing. Thank you. So I just wanted you to kind of get a beat on. We've been doing this for a long time. You know, we get it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's not just. And you're right. It's a heritage thing. You know that. You know the people are still understanding the concepts and the definition of the words and the thing that you're doing. They're getting some history and even more because of the communication ability and the internet and the archive. That's why we want to go. There's another. Service that's coming up. You know, we've been pimping this thing, you know, made safe and storage and an alternative internet to where it's on the unused hard drive of people and it's networked together and we go to satellite, you know, ones and zero transfer of we bypass the whole machine and suck it. We're over here now. Well, there's another project called Alexandria. And the point what they're doing, and they're using blockchain technology like with Bitcoin and so on to do this. So I'm going, okay. We need to have an ability to store data that they can't take away. It's always there. Like, get your book up, and they can whine and bitch all they want, and anybody anywhere can go get it. Well, the reason they call it Alexandria is because the library in Alexandria was burned down, you know, and the Romans taking over Egypt and blah, 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 and all this knowledge was gone.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to control knowledge. They can control you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's 1984. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the newspeak and, you know, memory hole of it was here a minute ago and now it's gone. So I'm going, if they're doing the concept of saving art, you know, saving, but they really, I know what their deal is. It's dissent. You know, they're putting up, you know, not government approved. You're not allowed to know. You didn't say you shouldn't be able to. So now they're, you know, with this different kind of technology, we're able to save ones and zeros anywhere and everywhere.
But that's
forever.
Exactly why they tried to pass that thing just recently about the government, where they're trying to control the internet. You know what I mean? It's only like mid last year they put through this something, you know, that basically controls. You know, the internet, websites and so forth, where you can actually ban specific websites and so forth. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be there, too, if people don't fight. They're going to get everywhere. I mean, it is about controlling knowledge, because if you control knowledge, you can control the people. If you can't control knowledge, this is exactly what happened in my country. In my country, I grew up with what we had, this the government station. I had one TV station as growing up, and you know, and you probably had a 500 at that point already, but you know, we had one. And
I remember it was 1988-89. I'm being a responsible individual. I mean, you had like HBO and some cable stuff and everything, but basically you come home, you want to watch the news, think you're being responsible, and what do you get? ABC, NBC, CBS, HBO, CNN, ABC, PBS, and it just, you go through the remote, you're going click, 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 click. It was the same five stories in the same order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, does anybody else see this? Mm. I mean, this is like what I call it, television programming, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
I'm going, damn. And then you get to, you know, 200 channels of whatever, and it's the same crap. It's just as much propaganda.
That's why I don't watch TV anymore at all.
I know. We did like a year ago. We went internet, but now they're tracking me even more. They're going, thank you. Amazon is plugged right in to the cloud of your searches next to, we house the CIA's next Yemen drone strike.
But exactly, man. But the point was, what I was trying to explain also is that when I grew up, there was basically, and there still is, what democratic socialism does is it creates an emotional wall around the country, And, you know, this emotional wall is being lifted slowly because of these means of the internet and, you know, information coming from the outside. So you do see that, you know, there are slowly there's a movement, even though if it's only 100 people. I mean, as a kid, I don't even think, you know, one person would have questioned anything. Where something is, you know, there's a slow process going on right now, and the world is waking up. Regardless,
this is the searches of all the "it's not my debt" stuff. I mean, we had it everywhere. You know, it's just not my debt, not my debt, not my debt. And these are the signs that we produced, you know, that went all over the valley here when they did this.
But that's exactly, put it on the politicians, man.
Oh, we did. You know, they saw it. They know it's a love
illusion. No, but I mean, what? They should be the ones in debt, you know? They created the debt, have the debt, you know? You stand for it, okay? Not the people.
Now, these here are signs that are, they were 14 by 48 big freeway billboards. Okay, uh-huh. This is, we had 9 locations all over the valley. And people were mad. I'm going, oh, hell no. It's not my debt. And these little babies with barcodes on their butt being scanned over a grocery scanner. You know, and then we have, you know, a fetus in there. And I go to my granddaughter. I said, that was you. When you were in your mother's belly, we did this for you. And she's like, wow, man, I understand. You know, and this is, I understand. I'd love to have this conversation. Because I think what's going to happen is there's going to be an understanding of exactly what you're talking about, that this is it's an illness, a pathology that's created.
Marxism is narcissistic personality disorder, definitively. I've proven it. I have proven it. All I need is the psychiatric department. I need people to start looking at it. The proof in itself is...
Okay, well, why is that bad to begin with, and how is the link?
The link? Sorry.
Yeah, okay. You go, my government's narcissistic.
No,
and they
no,
go,
no,
yay!
There's nothing wrong with being narcissistic. There's something wrong with being a narcissist. Okay? It's a mental illness. Okay? You're a narcissist.
And how do you
I'm
make,
narcissistic.
How
Everyone's
do you make the link between a government philosophy or this Marxism itself and it being a... narcissistic in a bad way? What are the traits that you're making the link
well
with?
Basically what happens is that you make the people at the bottom codependent. They're always going to be people at the bottom of society. They're codependent and they suddenly get handouts. It slowly, because they need these handouts, they will denigrate anyone in their path. There is already severe narcissism, and if you want to see a perfect example of severe narcissism, you have to look into the African American community. They're a perfect sample. Imagine that all people acted like that. That's what Denmark is, just on a more obscure, maybe more.
So, what do you mean that we need our entitlement of the system of we want and we deserve and we should?
It's not just it is entitlement. That's one part of it. The other part is,
well, I wouldn't say African American community. I would say, you know, some predominantly African-American inner city.
Well, you can start with
Cleveland.
What is the first thing that African says to the other African-American? He says the N-word. It is denigrative. They denigrate each other. They're an organism of people that are holding themselves down. Okay, that is what Marxism is, because it is about moving everyone to the lowest,
common denominator.
Common denominator. And that's what happens. So basically, from a sociological perspective, what happens is that those in need of social benefits, entitlements, they start denigrating everyone. What happens is that those on top who are emotionally strong, who says, oh, come on, you can do that, they will be denigrated to a level that is way lower, and those in the bottom become even more sick. And it's an evil process that will just continue until the whole of society suffers more or less from severe narcissism.
So why would you say unique to African Americans is because of their dependency
because
on
it's
government
very
some areas?
Because
or?
It's very obvious. If you look,
what's
at
obvious? The reason I got to come to the defense, I'm sensitive about this because I grew
up. Fine.
Because I grew up in the South where you had a lot of racism. I mean,
but it's not about
it.
It's not about racism.
So no, let me finish. So my point is that when we started the Love Illusion and you had this next generation of 07 of, you know, coming to the awareness of what you're talking about, sexual orientation and age and gender and race and religion and all that stuff didn't matter. It was not an issue. It was either they did or did not understand as individuals what was going on. Mm-hmm. Now, I can see the evidence that you would say in the Harlem or inner city here, dependency of whatever, and they happen to be Hispanic community here, or trailer white trash over here, or the African-American or whatever as an example. But I just want to not let it go by that it's just because they are black
that's exactly the point. I'm not saying that it has anything to do with them being black. It is just a matter of the way that the traits of severe narcissism are very obvious. They denigrate each other. They will call each other constantly, call each other names, and these kind of things that you see, which are very obvious. And this is narcissism. These are arrogant projections, and it's explained in the book. And these things become more and more obvious when people understand what severe narcissism is and how it works. And what I'm saying is that if I was to call you stupid 55 times a day, eventually you would feel stupid. And that is why narcissism is so effective. People have to understand that I'll give you an example. The left typical envy, which is, oh, he has more than me, blah blah blah, opposed you would look at the more right wing attitude, which is, oh my god, he's got more than me, well, what can I learn? You know what I mean? That's the benign envy versus negative envy or severe envy. So I mean, the main point is this is nothing to do with the black community. It's just something to do with the black community, showing severe signs of narcissism. And it's very obvious. These signs are very obvious.
Is this an intent? Is this a side effect of them trying to do it? Or is it they're looking at this result and they're going, yay, we're winning?
Well, I even had a few debates, and a lot of people brought up the fact that if an African-American, you know, tries to stand out and has a completely appropriate, you know, not what's up, man, you know, this kind of accent. If he has more clear English, I don't know what you call it, an American accent. What did you say?
It's just normal.
Like you and I, normal accent, right? So if he has that.
There's a normal accent?
Well, I don't know. Like the community, what I'm saying is that the community will try to hold him down. They will, you know, make him feel that he's bad, you know, and that's exactly what happens.
The reason you're so sensitive to this is that you see it as a really good example of how the people in Denmark are treated.
It's not different. I mean, you see the black community holding itself down. You know, instead of bringing each other up.
Blacks or minorities in Denmark? It's all
usually it's ethnic people. We have a few African Americans or people from around, you know, people that.
But generally, it's like 90 whatever percent just blonde hair, white boys.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, people didn't even, you know, immigrate to Denmark until the late 67. You know, Denmark did have slave trade, but they were at the Virgin Islands, St. Croix, St. Thomas, St. John down in mm-hmm. you know.
A lot of people got to keep in mind the Netherlands, the Dutch, you know, like a Dutch West Indies. I mean, you know, the Dutch were very, 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 you know, Netherlands there, they were explorers. I mean,
oh, yeah, but that's
conquering that empire of, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the Dutch kingdom was pretty, pretty much out there. Denmark is a very small community. It's only 5.5 million. And, you know, 100 years ago, they were probably only 3.5, I think. So, and there's not a lot of people out there, so not a lot of people to explore, you know, but what I'm trying to say, I mean, I deeply believe in the Martin Luther King assessment, which is, I have a dream that one day that all people will be, you know,
judged by the content of their character.
Exactly. That is exactly my point. I don't look, as an individualist, I don't look at people of their skin color. I look at their attitude. And if the first thing a person walks up to you and says is, hey, what's up, my nigga? You know, I'm like, hey, that's a white man's word. The white man came up with that word, and it's just awful. Why would you call your friend that? I mean, why would you? Stop doing that. Oh, at least I'm asking you kindly. Don't denigrate it. It's denigrated. Why would you call someone an idiot? Why would you call people names? It's arrogant projections, and all you do is tell me a story about your low self-esteem yourself. That's it. It's narcissism.
Skip to the end. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, this is been an interesting conversation, and manipulism. I can see from a perspective of someone that grew up in it and sensitive to it, how this would be of interest to a lot of people. But I tell you what, I'm interested in the fact that you have such a unique and what's the word I want to use, an assertive advocacy of what you believe that is not supported by your own government in Denmark, mm-hmm. to the point that you're willing to make an argument that you need, deserve, and should be granted political asylum in the United States because of that, is going to be a very interesting case.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be something I'm going, yeah, this is, yeah. And a lot of things that you have, I mean, what do we got, the factors involved in this for the audience to understand? One, they were described as the happiest place on earth.
Absolutely.
By, let me think, Oprah Winfrey. And, you know, it's sort of supported by, you know, somebody that
statistics
says so.
And stuff. Yeah,
done that. So then I go, okay, then you have someone that lived there, grew up there, had a problem with it, traveled the world, saw what the problem is, did the research on it, sees the same kind of things here, but the people here understand individualism and that it's like, oh my goodness, you know, it was demonstrated in the Ron Paul Evolution that was a marketable trait. That people supported that entire mm-hmm. generation starts espousing this. It's like overtaken social networking and Facebook and Twitter and this around the world. And we have Arab Spring that we were involved in, the philosophy of liberty. Have you ever seen the philosophy of liberty? You know, I'll show it to you.
Okay.
And we have, it's only about 8 minutes, and we translated that into Arabic and did thousands of DVDs that we dumped on Tahrir Square. And all of a sudden, what was the realization? That you own yourself. You know, the philosophy of liberty is self-ownership. And once you get that inserted mm-hmm. into a culture, I bet it's probably translated into Danish. I mean, you know, what's the language?
I agree 1,000,000,000%.
Well, what's the primary language in
Danish?
Danish.
Okay. Danish like the pastry.
All right, let's do this.
except not eatable.
I'll go with it. Philosophy of liberty. Philosophy of liberty, Danish. Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it's only 5 million people, but wouldn't surprise me.
They only just recently started selling the book with Atlas Shrugged in my country. I mean, there's nothing about liberty in Scandinavia whatsoever, you know?
Okay, now let's see. Philosophy of Nationalism, and I'm just going to want to do Philosophy of Liberty, Danish. Because this is what is, you know, so powerful. Philosophy.
Well, FYI, I'm actually writing the philosophy of individualism and currently working on writing the philosophy of individualism. So,
philosophy of liberty, it's not done in Danish yet. We can do that. Because we had it done in Arabic. I mean, it's in like dozens of languages. Arabic.
You're going to have 50 readers. It's not worth it. Seriously.
So it's the right 50.
Yeah, I know.
Don't think it. You know, I just get the right 50, man. I'm all over it. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and show him the philosophy of liberty later. Or maybe we'll tag it. We'll end the show with it. Yeah, that's right. Why don't we do that? That might be a way to go. You know, we'll go philosophy of liberty, and we'll go ahead and finish this segment with this. So anybody from Denmark that hadn't, they'll know what we're talking about, and we'll go ahead and do this. Because this is it's so powerful that I want to make sure that, you know, anyone that they just have a few minutes and skip to the end, that this animation is about 8 minutes, and it just shows the power of individual ownership and self-ownership. So I'm going, this is a powerful message that, you know, once you understand, because it's very difficult to disagree with this.
Oh, yeah.
And once you get that understanding, it's an infection that will screw up the rest of your life. Probably like what will happen if any of them read your book. Have anybody, any of your family members or anybody?
I've lost most of my family.
Because they read your book?
No, because I'm standing up against the system, yes.
And they say the system's
good.
That's
what happens
bad.
In a sect. I'm not up against a nation. I'm up against a sect. Marxism is a sect. It's a sect. It's explained very well in the book, okay?
Well, I mean, also, there's a lot of people. It's like, you know, libertarian, over the years, mm-hmm. you know, they're all excited, and they learned all this new information, and they go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, and mm-hmm. then there's a fight at the table because they just, you know, got to, you know, doink, 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 doink. You're a doinker. You just, you won't let up.
Yeah, no. Most people, I mean, I had my uncle remove me from Facebook merely because of my work. I mean, he could have, like, put a little thing that said, yeah, I don't want to see his posts, so this kind of thing. But no, I mean, people remove me. Family members remove me.
Because you're annoying!
Because I am telling them stuff they don't want to know, you know?
And keep telling them.
Oh, yeah.
And you're annoying.
I mean, it's a quest, you know what I mean? This is a suggestion.
I understand. I've been through that. I've been doing this 25 years, and I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah. It's a hard question.
What we do is that the mechanism that we use is to just go, you know, go give me that picture again. I'll take care of it. The mechanism that we use is you want to make it very clear who you are. It's obvious. You believe this. You wrote a book. I got a website. I'm in America. I've got, you know, here it is. And then you just talk about whatever and how's the weather.
Well, I didn't
because
just write a book
they'll on. Come to you and they will be with something they know that you have an interest in or understand, and it'll be like it was their idea. And you just mentor them through, but you're in an evangelistic mode of, damn it, grab them by the shirt collar and just listen to me.
I mean, when you just, you know, the liberty argument, I usually go to people and I go like, you walk up to someone and, you know, don't misunderstand me, but you walk up to someone in the street and you, especially a female, right? You walk up to a female in the street and you go, hey, I would like to rape you. And of course, the person is going to be pretty quick and say, "Whoa, no, you can't do that." And then the question would be, "Well, why can't I rape you?" And the person would go, "Well, because I own my body." And there you go. Exactly. That is the argument of liberty. But people don't understand that they own themselves in
well,
these sort of societies.
Okay, I'll give you an example. You know, I do this a lot. You know, I have people come on, I disagree, whatever. And they'll come on and I'll go like this. I go, "All right." Now, I was on Air America affiliate. I don't know if you know the radio. There was a liberal leftist America kind of libertarian, token libertarian on their liberal, progressive, Democrat, communist, socialist network. I mean, why would they have Ernie? Because, you know, I'm not, you know, being a butthead. I go like this. They go, yeah, but don't you have to think in this? And I go, yeah, I do think. So I just don't think what you think. You know?
Exactly.
I go, so I'm going, okay, I ask you this question. Imagine I put my hand on your shoulder and I ask you one question. Whose life is this? Well, they have one or two answers. It's either mine or it's somebody else's, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them, they go, well, it's mine. Okay.
Of course they will.
Well, then, yeah. You know, you get the right to protect it, right? I mean, if somebody wants to choke you out and you die, I mean, are you allowed to, like, keep breathing? I just want to know if you keep breathing it out. And if you make something or it's yours or you create something out of art or you get a crayon on a piece of paper and somebody just takes it, I mean, you know, is it yours or it's not yours? Or, I mean, once you progress from that, then you start getting into taxation. You start getting into who gets the control for what. If you're not bothering anybody else or how much drugs you use or go shooting, I mean, all these things start to, if you just get them to admit that they own themselves.
Yes.
Well, some people, they'll be, you know, they're kind of clever. You know, they're going, yeah. I already know. You're going, well, you know, the community owns or this, you know, what? Okay, then we'll talk about the weather. I don't even want to engage them because I go, if you don't acknowledge that you own yourself, well, then, you know, peace out and have
but
a nice life.
What you're describing, that other individual that denies this simple right of the human being, is basically projecting what is known in psychology, and I describe it very well in the book, known as bad boundaries, which is psychopathy. So, I mean, severe narcissism and
no, but see, you got to just show it. If you're familiar with a writer named Larkin Rose.
Yes, and I'm actually hopefully meeting him with you at the the festival.
Oh, Jackalope?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is Larkin going to go? Is he thinking of going?
Well, it says so on the...
Really? Well, he went last year. So maybe that was last year that he might. Yeah, if he's coming again, man, hell yeah, that'd be awesome.
Well, I'm going. I'm going definitely. And I'm if there are any listeners out there, I'd like to hitch a ride.
I don't know. We'll make sure you get up. You know, just keep in contact with me. There's always a travel or something, because what happens? A lot of people come from out of state to Sky Harbor, and they just, you know, hitch a ride when somebody goes up and peace. You know, but the at the Jackalope Freedom Fest, he goes, "Well, I want to speak." I go, "Well, there's nobody in charge."
But that's exactly the point. I'm going to go up there and I'm going to speak, man.
Well, get up to the microphone and start talking.
Exactly.
There's a microphone. I don't know, maybe. That's how it is. You know, we were talking to Patrick Byrne from Overstock.com. I had him on the show last week, and he's gone to a couple of festivals that we suggested, and he spoke at our Freedom Summit we did last year, and so on. Went to Pork Fest right after that, and he goes, "Jackalope, Is that fair? Can I go? That's dry camping, man. Oh, we'll set you up a tent, but, man, you know, there's no room service. I just want everybody to know that.
But, I mean, I just to get back to the point about these kind of debates, when you're up against these very far left-wing individuals, or not individuals, collectivists, one has to understand that the more narcissism one is driven by, the less empathy. And when you don't have empathy, all you usually can relate to is your own needs and desires.
Okay, so, now that's a good point.
So the point is that you might come up with something, and that's where I'm describing. This is why my work is valid, because it describes the problem that you are talking to someone who is not emotionally capable of having a rational debate. Not because they're stupid, but because they're emotionally incapable of understanding these boundaries. Okay, so it's and that's why, I mean, I've got psychologists all around the world that are slowly starting to wake up in favor of my work. I just had someone do an assessment online, actually, on YouTube, and he did a great job just a couple of days ago. And you know, it takes a long time. The problem with sending out a book on the market is it takes a lot of people to read it before it starts really spreading out there, you know?
Nah, so, it takes enough people to be able to explain it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my experience has been, we never really focused on, I mean, we did a lot of creative stuff to get people to pay attention, but you had to have something for them to pay attention to. That's what the Lovolution signs on overpasses everywhere were. You know what? You know, they were taken by this Lovolution. We want a revolution, but without violence. And kind of, you know, who represents that? Well, Dr. Ron Paul was just awesome. He was on the show yesterday. We had him on yesterday. And I'm going, you know, here's someone that is just lived this and talked about this in various different forms.
Oh,
about
I wish
what
I could get that
about book
in his hands, man.
Well, I can make sure he gets
it.
Oh,
please do so, man.
Well, I can't make him read it, but
no,
I mean, you know.
You can't lead the horse to the chair.
You know, but I get it to him. You know, we're in communication with him today on, you know, promoting his latest book. Well, there you see it right there. That's the book, Swords to Plowshares. We just did a show on it yesterday. And this is, he's the point that he was making in this book is that his entire life, and he's like 80 years old, his entire life, he has, you know, his
isn't he like
family, everybody's been at war
this year, huh? Yeah, I think it actually, he's going 80 this year, right?
Yeah, he's been he's been at war.
We're at war. The only thing is, as a pro-libertarian, I don't believe, I would believe, or I would be under the assumption that you don't believe in you know, you believe in defending yourself, but you don't believe in attacking. You know,
non-aggression principle.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
non-aggression
I'm not
principle.
About going taking what.
But that is what individualism is. It's non-coercion. It's truth seeking. You know, it's about leave me alone. I have that right. It's my body, man. You know, and especially your child that you referred to here. Again, how can you claim that that child just born has a debt? What the heck is up with this?
It seems
sick.
Like an easy one for me, and it is starting to permeate this generation next.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they have to really, you know, I see the clamps coming down on the internet. They're already, if you advocate or show pictures or something they don't like, boom, you're not allowed to use ad words like antiwar.com. They took away all the revenue stream from a very popular site that makes money from their ads. Nope, not allowed with Google. YouTube, they have Guy Mox News, 65,000 videos, edits 30 hours of news footage a day, puts it up, all gone. Why? No, because the perspective that he was doing on certain people saying certain stuff, nope, not allowed. You have YouTube's done by We Are Change, Luke Radowski, he's covering Bilderberger from inside, doing all this kind of hat, nope, not allowed. You know, I'm going, wow, we need to have something where they can't tell us we're not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that? Well, technology is starting to do that. We've been advocating
for
that.
We're doing it right now.
Yep,
exactly.
Yep,
but that's the point.
Yep.
And that's why I started giving my work away for free. Because, I mean, as I said, this is a war. Okay.
Or do you have a donation button? Do you take Bitcoin or anything?
I do have a donation button, and I'm going to try to move it on a little further up on top so I could receive a bit of...
Well, what about Bitcoin? You get Bitcoin, take Bitcoin?
I haven't really worked
on
it. Sorry. I kind of see Bitcoin as a currency that the government is going to try to out...
Oh, no,
ban.
They already are.
They're trying, yeah. But that's the problem. But I believe that maybe gold would be the solution. You know, I'll give you a 15 grams of this. And
yeah,
you give
we
me
deal
that, you know?
Heavily in silver. We do silver a lot. And we have a silver calculator app, so when we go to these festivals and everything, mm-hmm. You'll be up at Jackalope, they'll be dealing in silver.
Oh, silver might actually be a better option, because I heard that the government, if it any problems, major problems happens with inflation and so forth, they go out and take the gold from...
Yeah, no, they, well, the reason we use silver is because it's in smaller denominations for stuff.
Okay.
You know, it's like, you know, one...
You don't have to have like $50 on you as a minimum and a little little thing, right?
We'd go in quarter. I'll show you. We have silver quarters that are, you know, you go on here, and we have, and I'll just show you right now. You go to, on your Android, and I think they have it in iOS too, but, I don't want to install. Everybody wants to install a new something for me. Okay, so I go in here, and I go silver calculator. Now I want to do an exchange. I just say, okay, I got silver dimes or quarters or something, mm-hmm. and I need, you know, like $6 worth. What does that tell me?
Silver dollar at home.
I need 5 U.S. dimes, and my change is 31 cents based on the current price of, you know, there it is. All right. So this kind of stuff allows me to use silver and go around and do transactions at festivals, and it doesn't matter what currency. You can have it denominated in euros if you want to understand. You know, so this made it available for us to be able to trade in whatever silver. And the reason we use 64 and earlier U.S. minted coins is because they were 90% silver. And 64, it went to whatever pot metal, or who gives a crap. But so we use old silver, mercury dimes, you know, or something, little Liberty dimes and such, and quarters and half dollars. And we have it, or we get, you know, we bring our silver ounces that we have for Freedom's Phoenix, that kind of thing. And we go and we do our purchases at these festivals that way. Jackalope is going to be outside of internet coverage, okay? And he might get a little bit. You stand on the, you know, you do the rabbit thing on one leg next to the hill of something, you might get something. But it's out there. So you're not able to do Bitcoin. You know, now some people will do Bitcoin, and you'll have new ways that they're starting to do that, but without having to constantly be on. But the thing is that this next generation is understanding the power of the autonomy away from the system.
Yes.
And if you don't do that or understand it or at least seek, and it's more than I use it, is that I make sure it can be used, that it's a backup. Now, if they had the infrastructure that we have here as a Liberty community in the U.S., in Greece, they're like, screw the euro. I mean, we don't care. We'll go over to here, which is what was happening. They're starting to do barter. They were starting to denominate, you know, hotel bills and drachmas. They're starting to go, they're going, whoa, 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 whoa. When we threatened to kick you out and you said, good, we didn't think you'd do that. You know, don't you want to stay? Well, we want you to stay. Please, you can't go. All right? So this is just the option of knowing what you can do and why you would do it. There are other options out there I think you need to know a little bit more about that gives you, you know, man, we're much, as a Liberty community, it's much further along than you think.
You know? Oh, yeah, I know. And, you know, I've just been, it's kind of hard coming from Europe, and I know that Americans are, I got a $100 donation just the other day, and I instantly put it in to try to promoting the work. I mean, I'm all about, you know, exposing my work and trying. For me, it's not really so much about me. I've lost everything already. I've lost my country. I've lost my children, at least for a couple of years, until I hopefully get things under control and can get them here, you know, this sort of thing.
Yeah, but you're crazy, man.
I'm definitely crazy.
You know, your kids, positively crazy. How do your kids, do they see you as you're the crazy dad?
No, they love me, dearly. They understand. I've got two girls, and I promise you, these girls have been brought up with one single notion, freedom. Okay? All great moral derived from that one single notion. Because if you don't give freedom, if you want freedom, you got to give it to someone else too. And that creates the exact the positive boundaries that you have between people. You know, the difference, the problem with collectivism is I believe something. What I believe in is so right that it's also right for you. And I'm willing to kill you or kill people, coerce or do whatever to get people to do it my way. But as an individualist, your notion is that, hey, I believe in something, but it's not necessarily right for you. You know, so those are positive boundaries versus opposite. Negative boundaries versus positive boundaries. So,
all right. Well, we can help in your effort here. I mean, we're on the same page.
There's,
and you have a book.
Okay. And I'm also writing The Philosophy of Individualism. I actually own individualism.com. I am so lucky.
I am shocked that was available.
I fought for that
one. You win!
And I sent the book to the guy, and eventually he was down. He started at $6,000 for the domain name, and I was like, whoa, I'm the guy. I am the guy. I'm the guy for this. I'm writing The Philosophy. I need this domain, okay? And I'm actually probably 5 years away from publishing that book.
And what did he say? He just gave it to you? Or
No. And he was like, no, it's $5,000. And I said, well, I got people to fund this and stuff. And it took a while. And eventually I was like, well, I'm sending you the book. You should check out that I am really I've done, this is important stuff, you know? And about 14 days later, he wrote back that he was going to sell it for $1,000. So
score.
Oh yeah.
Score.
That was pretty cool.
I want to talk to him. I do the story. Hell, that's part of the story. Very cool. Very cool. Well, we want to help too.
Yeah. I'm really grateful. You.
Well, we made the effort. We were on gone traveling around the country, all our stuff for a couple of weeks, and he had contact. And I go, well, we're not back yet. We're not back, but we kept pinging each other, trying to make sure we got you in. So we got hooked up. All right. Well, you get to different stages of you do your asylum, effort.
It's going to be a pretty slow process.
Once you get your government number, once you fill out the first form, when that happens. Boom! The timer starts ticking.
Yeah,
tick, 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 tick. Here we go. So we drag. And they'll go, well, we'll drag it out for a decade. And you go, good! I need to talk about it for at least a decade.
I can stay in the nation without being illegal, right?
I don't know. See, that's one thing that we do is that whenever we do lawsuits and so on, they're just like, we're going to drag it out. And they don't understand. Hell, man.
It's only my
drag
badge.
It out. How many years can I go and, with my, $180 filing fee of whatever, and how much can we keep yakking about? You're not deciding on that. You go, take your time. I'm good. I don't worry about it. So that's one thing they just don't anticipate. They don't get it. They think I care what their black robe says.
But it's just like the cop. It's just like the cop when you were like denying him, all this, and he's like, well, it's going to take time. And I'm like, cool. Your time too.
Yeah. No, I'm good. You knock yourself out. I'm on break.
Exactly. It's like, hey, I'm upholding my rights, man. That's the cool thing about America. You actually understand your rights. You would never have someone.
Not everybody.
Oh, I know, but at least most people would understand that you have a Second and a First Amendment. Even the dumb people.
Yeah, not everybody. But it's getting better. I mean, because anybody looking for the truth, they just push, the button on the computer. Eventually, they'll get. That's why they're taking it down. That's why they're controlling. That's why we have a lot of manipulation. And we're dealing with right now, and our search engine optimization keep changing stuff. Our mailing of our email dispatch, people are complaining that it's kind of being diverted off into whatever. I'm going, wow. So we're doing a lot of things to make sure the message gets out because
heard the government hasn't taught the Constitution for close to 100 years in America, actually. So it's kind of like, if they're trying to coerce and if they're trying to manipulate, well, it's then other people have to get the truth out there.
Oh, no, they teach the Constitution. They teach that the Constitution gives them a right to make sure you don't get to use the Constitution. I mean, it's all manipulated BS and kind of whatever. This is a really good, from my standpoint, your effort is advantageous, not because I got to get involved in what you're doing or what you say, or even I don't care. My thing is that you get to say it.
Oh, yeah.
And that you're saying it here. There are people that would like to listen to it, and that you would make the argument that you're a political refugee from Denmark of all places.
From a socialist country.
Yeah, no. That's awesome. How's it different from Cuba?
It is not.
I mean,
the only difference is that they are doing a pretense system. Okay? The whole, and that's why, the reason why I started writing was because it's virtually impossible to just give people the entire puzzle of the game just through a radio show kind of thing. It's impossible because there is so much knowledge that you have to understand. First, you have to understand the disorder. Then you have to understand how a narcissist creates what is known as a sect around them. You have to understand how sex work and how the whole community, how they denigrate, how they manipulate, and how the cool thing about this whole system or game is like how someone can manage to manipulate people into, you're a bad guy because you don't want to give me your money, but I'm not a bad guy because I want to steal them from you. What the hell? This is and how is that possible? That is what I'm trying to explain to people, how these people can twist the truth. How they can turn everything upside down. How the guy that questions things becomes the bad guy. The person that actually believes they own their own body becomes the bad guy. How everything's come, yeah, you know, upside down. That is what I'm trying to get through with.
You know, the one thing that we have a concept we keep working on. In fact, Larkin is involved in this a little bit. And it's called Defending Archimedes. And the point that we were making is that the geniuses of the past, or there's more geniuses being born this year than ever existed, you know, for the past millennia. I mean, you know, it's just amazing how smart humanity can be when they can communicate freely with each other, and it just accumulative information. It's just that we're going to live in a utopia without government. They're in the way. And they just want to glean from them. And can't we be parasites? And you're very productive and smart people. And that we need to have our cut. And this is why.
Generally, the problem is that the government, you know, suffers from delusions of grandeur. I mean, they think they have the right to intrude on everyone. You know,
well, whether they do or not, they do it anyway.
Oh yeah, that's the problem. I mean, so, they think they're cleverer than the people. They're like, what are they, 500 people in the government, you know, out there, and they think they're cleverer than 15 million people.
Well, I don't care if they're smarter or not. I just want to have, that's what the promise of America, that's why
to think for yourself.
That's why this show is called Declare Your Independence.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Declaration of Independence is really simple. It was just, you know, without a government form. And what it was is that, you know, the purpose of government, and they described it in that document, the purpose is to defend individual rights. You're going to have this government to make sure everybody leaves you alone. Especially us. I mean, you know, government itself, but then you created this thing and then it turns into this.
But that is exactly what individualism is, that government does not give, and as in a form of democracy, you know, gives the right, places the rights of a single individual in the hands of a group known as 51%, right? But rather places the right of the individual in that single individual.
That was the promise.
That's exactly the point. That was what your great forefathers, you know, tried
the
to
promise.
Do.
It wasn't perfect. I mean, you know, they got...
No. The Constitution in America is not perfect. Absolutely not.
I'm not
but
a big
it's
Constitution
still the best, it is the best
guy.
Constitution written in history still.
And still sucked.
It still sucks. Well, humanity learns. You know what I mean? You can't learn without being mistaken. You know?
So. Yeah. No. It was a great attempt, and it was based on, you know, the promises of a lot of stuff. But if you read it straight through, you ever read the Constitution?
I have read some of it.
If you just read the Constitution without the Bill of Rights, you had that Bill of Rights, you might as well just you know call him Kang. I mean, you know. But you read the Constitution straight through, it's all about the power, the power, the power, the power, the power of the state. And if you disagree with it, we got treason and death.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right after the first thing,
okay.
You know, we have the power to regulate commerce, the power, you know, for immigration, the power of eminent domain. We take your land, the power to wage war, the power to tax. I go, hell, why don't they just call him king? You know, yeah, but we got the checks and balances of, you know, this legislative, executive, judicial. I go, oh, yeah, wait. Well, what happens when the executive, legislative, and judicial line up against the individual? Then what? You're in a free speech zone. That's what happens. You know?
Well, I mean, when you look at American history, it's not like America had freedom of speech for a long time. I mean, there are still the beep words, you know, on TV and all this stuff. You know,
yeah, so, I understand. We can go on. And, well, I tell you,
well, I'm all George Cole. You know, Cowell. Sorry, is it Cowell or Cole? George Cole? Colin. What is it called?
Colin Powell?
No, George
Carlin.
Yeah, George Carlin. Okay. Exactly. He was, I mean, he is, I am pro that. He was just awesome. I mean.
Yeah, no. We were pimping him for a long time. We still do. Because he's like, he's going, yep. You know, it's a special club, and then you ain't in it. You know, it's not going to get fixed. It's not made to get fixed. It's just, you're screwed, man.
No,
get over it.
What he did was awesome. I mean, he used comedian. You know. He as a comedian, he brought these things to people in a way that people could laugh. You know, and you know, it was
only funny because it was true. Yeah, I just, you know, that has to be some kind of ism right there. Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do is I'm going to go ahead and, you know, thanks, this was awesome. And I tell you what, we're going to follow up on your political asylum effort. And I'm going to go ahead and talk to an attorney friend of mine. And I think this might be something he would be interested in. Now, just a kind of little side project of kind of see what, you know, have you do the work.
This is the type of thing that might blow up, okay? You know.
No, I'm counting on her. I want to call her, okay? So we're going to go ahead and, you know, see what happens there.
To be honest.
Yeah. Well, see, one of the benefits is when you have him, and myself involved in it, it puts you on a little bit different level of they're like, just not. See, they usually, they'll come in and they'll call you in and intimidate you, realize we're going to kick your ass and kind of what, and you go, with our involvement, they'll go, damn, they want us to do that, you know? So I'm wondering how the dynamic and what repercussions we would get, because you're dealing with other countries. We had a situation in the 90s to where it was a long story, but it was a drug thing dealing with the corrupt government here in Thailand and newspaper articles we were publishing and so on. And they did not like, the State Department got involved. They were just like, oh, hell no. That. So I know this guy, but with the internet, we didn't have that then. It was not certainly to the degree we do now. But a lot of that information, one guy, he started taking all this information that he had and he put it on the internet. He was scared to come on and talk about all the stuff that he knew, and he started putting it on the internet. And I had another guest, a gentleman named Mike Schoen, that was one of the sons of the founder of U-Haul. Okay, it lives here in Paradise Valley. So he's got his gazillions. He's got some money. He's good. And he's the black sheep of the family. Same kind of thing.
I love that.
Freedom and so on.
I'm the black sheep, too.
And he was supporting this guy's efforts on the CIA and their running of drugs around the world and so on. He agrees on, like, a Thursday or Friday, Mike came on my show. So since he came on and didn't get killed right away, he goes, I'll come on your show. You know, I'll come on. It's Monday or Tuesday. I think it was Monday that he was scheduled, and he doesn't come on the air. We can't get a hold of him. I get a call during the show. He was killed over the weekend. So don't think I don't understand.
No. I.
So this is, and it was, Travis, he's walking across the street at 1 in the morning, and a car hit him.
But, you know, the curious thing about this sort of thing is that, you know, I am actually under the impression
Brian that, Quick, that's what his name was. I was trying to remember, Brian Quick.
I'm under the impression that the left kind of, in what do you call it, endures. They like immigration. They like all the legal, and they kind of, you know.
They just want more voters.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. But, you know, I would like to see them, you know, then suddenly I'm not allowed to be here kind of thing.
Yeah. No, you're not. No.
You're
going to
meet a lot of funny hypocrisy.
We have a lot of socially. You know, it's one thing that we did. The philosophy of liberty that we're going to play at the end here is in Spanish. So we did Filosofía de la Libertad. And we did where they had hundreds of thousands. It was like probably a couple hundred thousand people of immigrants marching on the state capitol here years ago. Back in, I was like 06, 07 around there. And they were marching, you know, don't ship us off, and, you know, we love America and all that kind of stuff. So we went and made 20-something thousand of these cards that forwarded to that video. Because I'm going, look, the reason you left, you know, this socialist states, you know, south of the border here, is because that philosophy has created the problems that you have, and that's why you came here. You don't want to recreate it. That's, I mean, the whole point is not to do that again. So we had the a liaison to Sonora, a state in Mexico that had a sister state relationship with Arizona, and he had an office at the state capitol. Well, he was libertarian, and he calls me and he says, hey man, come down and visit me at 1700 West Washington. I'm going, well, that's the state capitol building. He goes, yeah, I got an office in there. I'm going, and I knew him from before. I'm like, how the hell do you got an office in the state capitol? Explain. I will come down. He was the liaison to the governor of Sonora in Mexico because he used to babysit him when he was younger. So they knew each other, and he gave him this position, go represent us at the Capitol. Well, Janet Napolitano was our governor, which later became head of the American Gestapo, the Homeland Security. Okay. Well, she was like, I can't believe they would, you know, put a conservative in that position. He goes, I'm not conservative. I'm a libertarian. Well, he did not get invited to the Christmas parties. Okay. So he wanted to have, you know, I need to get fired from this, man. I'm just so sick of it. I want to go out in a blaze of glory. And I'm going, well, I can help you with that. So when they had a couple hundred thousand people down there, Hispanics, protesting, we did tens of thousands of these cards that said, Filosofía de la Libertad, a message from a representative of the governor of Sonora. So they were like passing it out and threatening. So what did they do? They went to this video. And what did they learn? The power and the philosophy of self-ownership.
See, that's
and
the problem. State government
did not want them to know that.
Exactly, because you can't argue against it. You can't argue against the right that you own your own body.
Put it on thousands of DVDs in the PAL format for the Middle East and dumped them in Alexandria, Egypt. They took them to Tahrir Square, went all over. All of a sudden, they exploded. International Society for Individual Liberty that hosts these. Their professor that was based on a book, Jonathan Gullible, it's a long story, kind of the same thing that you're doing. He is an economics professor at University of Hawaii there. Well, he had these like 3-minute little commercials. A friend of his owned the radio station that he did supporting a lot of what you're talking about. Well, those were compilated into a book, and then this another supporter, just another guy that had some techie skills, did this animation, and it was just like a summation of all these old 3-minute radio spots that he was doing in Hawaii. Well, when it hit Arabic, they go, "Oh my God, Ernie! The second most downloaded country next to the United States for this video is Saudi Arabia, followed by Egypt and Morocco. What the hell did
and
you do?
And you can create a whole revolution over something
exactly.
like that. Exactly.
Based on what? Self-ownership.
Oh,
because what was Egypt asking for? We need Pharaoh number 337. We need to be ruled better. I'm going, seriously? How's that going to work out, So I'm going, Mubarak, whatever.
Please subjugate me.
Who cares?
Please subjugate me. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, just do it better. And I'm going, no, hell no. You need to understand self-ownership. So we have an Arabic Facebook and an Arabic Twitter called Haria Phoenix, which is Freedom's Phoenix in Arabic. So what happens? Every day we put it up there. Now, we had within the first week like 2,600 Twitter followers, and they canceled the account. So we changed the spelling, did it again. Okay, this is in Arabic. You go on Freedom's Phoenix. I will show you how this works. I go in right here, right now. Then I go Freedom's Phoenix. I go Special Editions. Haria Phoenix.
On what grounds did they cancel that account, man?
I don't ask. I don't know. I don't care.
I mean,
that's like work because they can. I mean, get over it, man.
I know. That's just how it works, eh? I mean, this is what's so sick about the world. Who is in charge of these things,
Banks.
Yeah, at least people are up in the top. I mean, I just don't understand why people would want this power.
Okay, we translate into 39 languages. I go Arabic. It does the translation. Any site, the entire page is now in Arabic. Now, this is the one
That's hopefully not just Google Translate, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's
shit.
Caveman. I know, it's caveman talk,
it's shit,
but, it's better not. I mean, it gives them, the ability to kind of get an idea from our perspective of what's happening. So it says, two Iran deals were signed Tuesday, yada, yada, yada. I click on this, and it goes to the site, and it translates it for you. Mm-hmm. See, the thing was, it wasn't so much the quality of the translation as it was that it was translated, and that they're going, oh, damn it. So what do we do? Now, a lot of times, I was talking to some guys in Poland that came in, and what were they saying? They're going, Ernie, we go to your site, and we do it in English, because so many people speak English around the world is a second language that a lot of times, and that's why they have a program called Language of Liberty. This is something that would help you in Denmark. Language of Liberty is a thing that's put on by, a guy with some money. I mean, he's retired, stockbroken, whatever. And he went to Croatia because that's where his grandparents were from, and he wanted to do exactly what you're doing. He wanted to save the homeland, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to the colleges and universities, and they have classes. And the reason they call it Language of Liberty is it's done in English, because most people, there is a
universal
second language.
More or less, yeah.
And then they have, but a lot of the writings, are in English. You get, Thomas Jefferson kind of thing. So you go in and you say, all right. He starts training these people. Now Students for Liberty get heavily involved in this. We had a Bitcoin wallet guy that we knew was from Kiev. Dimitri, we're going, hey, man, hook these guys up, in the Ukraine. They're having problems with the money system and the banks, and they need need to understand Bitcoin. So he goes in with these universities. So the world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And you find what's the one base thing you want people to understand at the very foundation, the inoculation of your daughters, the inoculation of the junior high, the inoculation when they start to get testosterone and estrogen and they're developing, going through puberty and they're challenging the man and questioning authority, and you got the government there with junior high separated out. This is how you protest, and I'm just a bill, and through the man, and oh yeah, and if you want to challenge the man, it's dad! He's evil! Here's a DARE program, turn him in drugs. I mean, you know, it's just, I get it, man. It's all, how do you inoculate this next generation? You need to do it before puberty. You need to do it during puberty. That's why 7th and 8th grade in America, they separate junior high from elementary and from high school, because they're going through, I've seen it happen. You know, I had kids, I go speak at, you know, schools, I would go to the elementary school when we're talking about this kind of self-ownership and freedom, that cool, I get it, and thanks, it was better than listening to the teacher and where's recess. High school, yeah, well, you get some nice conversations, but they already think they know everything. College, the same thing, it's junior high. 7th and 8th graders, the bell is 2 minutes from, and I go, what do we need to get my, you know, space flying car thing? I mean, what do we need? You know, more freedom. What do we need to be more prosperous and healthier? Freedom! Freedom! I go, freedom! Freedom! As they're marching out the door. And I could do it every time. I build up to the crescendo, freedom, freedom! But only junior high kids. And I'm going, what the hell is going on? That's why you had Hitler Youth and everything done at puberty.
Oh, you get a brainwash.
It was puberty.
Age, yeah.
It's right. That's why you have.
But
the
that's also
high.
Why I used so much time. I used this last half year on preparing my children for the fact that daddy was leaving. Okay, and that I might actually have a couple of years before I would have money enough to have them see me here in America. So you know it. But I put in the elements of what is the most important thing in your life, and that is that you own your body.
You can't tell people that. That's bad. They might think they own their body.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to go ahead, and this has been a good time. So you can see, we're going to continue this relationship, you know, in a way, authoritarian sociopathy. I want to make sure we get that in there. I have Donna put it in, authoritarian sociopathy. And I'm going to go ahead and follow what you're doing, especially because I want to be able to make sure that we got an opportunity to have this discussion. Can you leave what is considered, you know, part of the European Union, the Western culture? It's a lot in our history. We have a lot of economics interchange. Was it the Maersk shipping we see on the side of ships and stuff? And Denmark, they can make some money somewhere. I mean, they're, you know, living off of that. But I tell you, we can have an impact just by following your effort. And it and given the reasoning why you're, you know, a political refugee. So that'll be interesting. Let's go ahead and we'll end out with this. And I want to make sure that, you know, people understand what this is and those that don't know. And if you do, it's worth watching anyway. Here we go.
Can I borrow your pen, please?